So I figured to try and sell our T-shirt, we'd just get you to cut Austin's promo as yourself. So I've written you a little thing there. Do you want to have a go at it?
As myself?
As yourself.
Okay. You sit there and thump your calculator and say your times tables, and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your prime numbers. Talk about pi, 3.14 to two decimal places. Scrivens 3.14 says, I just did your maths. All of it. All you gotta do is go and buy a cheap T-shirt from newgenpodcast.bigcartel.com and get back some of the equations that you had in your prime.
World Wrestling Federation Superstar Line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just call 1-900-737-4WWF. On option 6, you'll hear speculation on the alleged love triangle between Goldust, Marlena, and Sable. But where does Mankind fit into this picture? The call costs only $1.49 per minute, and kids, you must be 18 years of age or have your parents' permission before calling. Welcome back, everyone, to more Monday Night Raw. Jim Cornette back in the locker room area. You don't seem too upset over whom Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson are going to choose as a partner.
Why would I be upset? It's been a real productive night for Camp Cornette because the Ultimate Warrior's out of the picture in more ways than one. And Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson, they're just bluffing. They're trying to buy time. They ain't got no partner.
They don't have anybody, Jimmy.
Of course not, King, because nobody in their right mind would step into that spot to be their partner in that six-man tag after what we just did a little while ago to the Warrior.
Right.
I happen to know that all the WWF superstars, they already have prior commitments.
Yeah.
So nobody in their right mind would step into it. All the other guys are taken. So Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson, you're bluffing. July 21st, International Incident, I promise you this. The three members of Camp Cornette are going to take real good care of the two of you because you're coming to a gang fight and you're forgetting to bring your own gang.
Oh, yeah! All right, thank you very much. Let's take you down to Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson, standing by. Gentlemen, we're running out of time. Yeah, whom have you chosen? Right.
Jim Cornette, we don't bluff. This is the World Wrestling Federation. Boy, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, and you should have folded. Surprise, surprise. Look what we have for Camp Cornette. My
psycho shit!
And you're looking at me! And you're probably asking yourself, Shawn Michaels, what have you gone and done?
Yeah, twice he's opened the gates of hell, and he has released me. This time for you, Cornette, and the Cornette camp, there's nothing, there's no good news! Because I can hear you. I can hear you screaming out for help. For help. But there's no one there.
I'd much rather be on this team, believe me.
There's no one there!
Thank you, gentlemen, and Jim Cornette.
Put the camera back on me. What are you trying to do to me? Gorilla Monsoon, somebody's trying to... Camp Cornette is not going to get in a ring with that guy. He's a nut. That's why he hasn't been in the WWF. He's been locked up someplace getting treatment, putting electrodes to his head. They've traded up the gas chamber for the electric chair. But I'm going to tell you something right now. I ain't going to put up with this. There's no way that Camp Cornette is going to be forced to get in a ring with a stinking monster like Psycho Sid. I'm calling Clarence Mason. I'm doing whatever I got to do. But one way or another, I'm sick and tired of
being torn.
Hello, and welcome to episode 38 of the New Generation Project podcast, where we break down the beginning of the boom period and the ascension of Austin 316 in the mid-90s. Today, we watch the showdown between the People's Posse and Camp Cornette. It's In Your House, International Incident. My name is Stuart Brooks, and I'm joined today by our very own New World Organization of Podcasting. Brother, it's Big Sexy Paul Scrivens.
Yeah.
And last call, Adam Wykes.
Hello.
That was Scott Hall's gimmick when he was an alcoholic in WCW.
Really?
Yeah. They made it into a storyline, obviously.
I'm not an alcoholic.
How are you both doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, thanks. Feeling fairly healthy for once.
Okay, good stuff. Paul?
Tickety-boo.
And yourself?
Yeah, not bad. We just watched a very informative documentary about what to do in a zombie apocalypse, didn't we, Adam?
Yes, we did. It told us lots of useful information.
Batshit crazy stuff where they try to make out like terrorists were zombies and Nazis were zombies and all sorts of craziness.
Although, you know, did talk about the Draugr, didn't it? You know,
yeah, which, nice Skyrim link there.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty good.
What should you do?
Well, you can bug in or bug out. Bug in means you shack up where you are, or bug out means you go out on the road.
Yeah. Bugging out's like being nomadic.
Yeah.
So all of this is really highly technical. Either you do one of two.
You stay where you are or you move, yeah.
Yeah. Also, well, really learned that the best weapon to have is like some kind of a shotgun.
Pump action shotgun.
It's a Remington shotgun or something.
Things you might have around the house, like a crowbar, is also good.
Yeah, just keep a crowbar handy in my... Yeah, just in my living room.
Adam's got a hammer in the cupboard. That would also be useful.
I normally have a cricket bat knocking around.
Yeah, I imagine that'd be pretty good. Yeah.
Well, it is in cliched films of zombies.
Yeah. So we've learned lots of useful information this afternoon.
Exactly, yeah.
Also very glad that Leicester City will be going into the final day of the football season assured of their safety in the Premier League.
Yeah, who would have saw that coming?
No one.
Yeah.
Absolutely no one.
Well, most people probably within the first five games of the season. And
but then the following 21.
Yeah. When we were all predicting like a solid mid-table
like
finish.
12th finish, yeah. But full credit to them, you know, to completely turn their season around. And you would have never thought, last day you'd be thinking, no, doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter what happens.
Stunning flourish towards the end.
Very proud of them.
What do you make of Nigel Pearson?
You can like him or lump him, Paul.
Can I?
Yeah, but he said himself.
The question that I really want to ask you about Nigel Pearson is, do you think he'd make a good wrestling manager?
Not as good as Kevin Keegan.
But could you just see him in kind of that kind of Jim Cornette promo role?
He's not very charismatic, is Pearson.
No, but that kind of deadpan delivery, because he's quite... Have you seen that interview where the guy's having a go at him saying you could be perceived as either a bully or being paranoid?
Yeah.
He just goes, could I?
Did you see any extracts from the, you know, Player of the Season Premiership Award where Louis van Gaal did a speech?
I saw some posts about it on Facebook, but I've not seen it.
They showed, I don't know, about 20 seconds of it on the Breakfast News this morning, and yeah, he'd be a really good wrestling manager. Apparently he's dead flamboyant.
I think Keegan or Jose Mourinho would make
Mourinho
the best
would be
wrestling
amazing.
Managers.
He's the most Bobby the Brain Heenan of all the managers.
Who was the manager that Leicester had a little while ago that was... really outspoken. It would just like really call a spade a spade. He probably wouldn't call it a spade. He'd call it
Ian Holloway.
That's the one. Yeah. He would be a good wrestling manager.
Except no one in America could understand him. You could make him Neville's manager. There you go, job done.
That would be genius.
Inspired by the stellar effort from John Tenter and Big Bubba at Bash at the Beach in their Carson City Silver Dollar match, this week's challenge to you, the audience, was to put something at the top of a poll and tell us which wrestlers would compete for your chosen item. The following are our favourite suggestions. Gary Ellard Thurtle. The Smoking Guns fight each other for ownership of a young horse in a foal on a pole match. Warning, may cause logistical problems. Putting a horse at the top of a pole.
Particularly if it's sick.
Yeah.
Rocky Sherrington.
Brilliant name.
Yeah. Trish Stratus versus Mickey James. Each get 2 minutes on the pole. Lawler decides the winner. Very, very nice.
I see what he did there. He's used the pole for a different thing.
I didn't get it. Daniel Barker. Kevin Peterson versus Andrew Strauss in an England Central contract on a pole match.
I like the way that Kevin Peterson has managed to heal the entire England-like cricket setup. He's managed to babyface himself in a very Shawn Michaels way.
It's just genius. Because obviously it was like last week that he was scoring a triple century against Leicestershire just on the day before everything kicks off.
Yeah.
It's something like about the highest first-class score in England this century.
Wow.
Or something. So like really quite a significant score. And then to go from that to that, just the timing of that was impeccably Peterson.
Impeccably cunty, you could say.
Mrs. Scrivens, actually, I was playing a little bit of the last episode and she was upset about you using that word so much.
Do I use it quite a lot?
Apparently so.
Tell her I'm sorry.
You use it in sometimes quite apt situations, though, lots, such as the description of Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Okay. I'll try and restrict my usage of it. Sorry, Mrs. Scrivens.
Yeah.
Andrew Dean. Dolph Ziggler, Cesaro, Adam Rose, Tyson Kidd, Kofi Kingston and Adrian Neville in a Lucha Underground contract on a pole match. Winner gets to escape to the promised land of characters and storylines. Have you watched any Lucha Underground yet?
I've never seen any.
I've not, no.
You should definitely check some out. It's well worth watching. Some interesting stuff going on.
Where do we see it?
On the internet. Or downloaded from the internet.
Okay.
Who's wrestling in it?
Ricochet's there. John Morrison's there, Alberto Del Rio's there.
Oh, right. Okay.
Plus, you got a ton of sort of PWG guys and a lot of the AAA guys from Mexico.
So it's relatively high calibre,
then. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Plus, it's sort of part backed by Robert Rodriguez. So it's got a very unique look to it. Yeah.
Rodriguez?
Yes. He's a film director, Paul. I don't think Mrs. Scrivens would approve of his films.
What are his films?
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Did he do Desperado?
Desperado.
Classics, I'm sure.
She might like Desperado.
Yeah, it's got Antonio Banderas in it.
Yeah. Does he play guitar?
Yeah.
Peter Sanzoni. Taka Michinoku versus Paul Scrivens in a Japanese phonetic pronunciation book on a pole match.
I somehow think Taka wouldn't need the book.
No.
Paul, however, might.
I think he'd just kind of antagonise me. Chris Walsh, Alan Partridge versus Tony Hares in a second series contract on a pole match. Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in tragedy.
You were being all smug then, weren't you? Do you want to have another crack at that word there?
Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in tragedy.
What is wrong with you?
It's just a normal word.
It's the G and the D thing that's confusing you, isn't it?
It's the reading thing. You know what? I need to read it to a dog.
What?
Apparently, they're less judgmental and people read better in front of dogs. They do it in some primary schools now.
We should do another podcast where you just supplant us two with dogs.
Just like a Jack Russell and Labrador. There'll be less swearing, at least. Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in tragedy.
Try and sing it like the Bee Gees song.
Or Steps.
Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in a tragedy.
Tragedy.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Tragedy.
When the feeling's gone and you can't go on.
I can't go on. Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in tragedy.
You got it wrong again.
Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in a disaster.
Good thinking. Unfortunately, this five-star classic ends in an unfortunate incident, as the BBC's head of programming died in an unfortunate fall. Needless to say, Alan had the last laugh.
Fucking hell. Ash Preston. Morrissey versus Sonny in an interesting drug on a pole match. Sonny has the upper hand until Dagenham Dave hits Sonny with a southpaw. Morrissey climbs the pole, but Sonny gains the win after Moz is the first of the gang to die, thanks to interference from his hated rival, the National Front Disco Inferno.
Wow.
Yeah, good stuff. That took the Springsteen references and just hand it over to Morrissey. Well done.
Yeah, National Front Disco Inferno might be the best thing I've ever heard. Chris Hopkins, Mrs. Scrivens' copy of Striptease DVD on a pole.
I don't know who's competing in that.
I don't know.
I presume it might be you two.
Just Adam. He's not competing against anyone, he's just to slow him down.
Right, are there any words in this one, Paul, that have the letters D and G?
Mate, this has got a really complicated word in it, there's no chance. Andrew Scythe, Ivan Putski. Because a pole on a pole match is just the perfect level of metatextuality.
How can you say metatextuality first time, but you can't say prodigy or tragedy?
I can't wait till you guys mess up those words.
It's a real tragedy about the prodigy, isn't it? Paul's swearing at me, everybody.
That is not true.
Chris Palmer. Nails turns face and wants his prison sentence cut short. The only thing stopping him is the big boss man, and the only way to earn his freedom is to win a parole on a pole match.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, I'm liking these. A lot of them are puntastic.
Yeah. Chris Lacey, the keys to TNA on a pole, winner gets the whole company and has to pay its talent on time.
Matthew Cameron Naismith, Nigel Farage versus David Cameron versus Harriet Harman in a triple threat Eastern European on a pole match. Winner becomes Prime Minister when the interim Speaker of the House of Commons, Vince Russo, swerves and declares a general election where the fans must contact 1-900-909-9900.
Alistair Harding, woman versus Miss Elizabeth in a pole vaulting with Gene Okerlund on a pole match. The winner gets to fondle Gene Okerlund in any way she desires. Woman wins this bout as Miss Elizabeth is late down to the ring, looking distinctly like she's been doing the dirty with Ric Flair.
Dave Green, Scott Steiner versus Paul Scrivens in a maths degree on a pole match.
There are a lot of those,
yeah.
Hitting you against Scott Steiner in this one. I don't know if that's a match people want to see.
Be a bit of a squash.
Plus, as an absolute swerve, your degree isn't in maths, is it?
No.
What's your degree in?
Science.
Any particular one?
Chemistry.
Mm. Shock revelation. Shock swerve for you all.
It's not just chemistry. It's chemistry with management.
Okay.
Ash Preston, Raven versus the Raven in the first ever Edgar Allan Poe match.
Some literary references on the podcast. I like
very
it.
Very good.
Yeah. Nicholas Sawinski, all of Ric Flair's ex-wives in an alimony check on a pole match.
Ooh. How many is that?
That's like a fatal 10-way.
Vincent Krasauskas, the three of you, triple threat. Steph McGovern on a pole match.
Does she need to be on a pole?
She doesn't even need any help climbing up it because she's so massive.
You seem genuinely upset about that one.
I quite like Steph McGovern.
I know, that's the gag.
And I don't think she's that massive.
Is she following you on Twitter yet?
No, we're still unsuccessful.
Are you following her on Twitter yet?
Probably not. I'll do that.
Follow her.
I'll do that. And yeah, if people can just harass her to follow me on Twitter, that'd be grand.
Just if anybody, you know, wants to help Adam be followed by Steph McGovern from BBC Breakfast News.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Because I quite like her Stephometer.
I'm actually trying to get him that for his birthday, but it's not going so well. I googled her name on eBay and it didn't really come up with much.
She's not selling a Stephometer on eBay, then.
Sadly not.
That is a shame.
Cody Gatlin, Bret Hart versus Ric Flair in an autobiography on a pole match. The first to retrieve his book gets to force the other to read the chapter where they are buried by the author and agree they are the most overrated.
Sam Fagans, Bray Wyatt in a storyline on a pole match. After months and months of Wyatt feuding with people for no apparent reason, he is finally given the chance to get a meaningful storyline with actual stakes. Ignoring his opponent, he cuts a series of promos against the pole, claiming that the pole is acting steely but inside is full of fear. However, Wyatt also states that he and the pole are not so different, if only the pole can accept its inner darkness. In the match, the new face of fear is within arm's reach of a meaningful storyline, but misses and slips into obscurity.
Steve Jones. Dolph Ziggler versus Dean Ambrose in a push on a pole match. The match ends with Vince declaring a match a no contest and awarding the push to Ryback. Also depressing, yes.
Rocky Sherrington. Mantart versus El Torito in a cowbell on a pole match. Winner gets a field of grass. The loser becomes a burger. I've got to say, I do like burgers.
Really? I didn't know that about you. Thank you all very much for your suggestions. This time, another fantastic set of stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
Like I say, a lot of puntastic ones in there, which I was very fond of.
Can I just make a request?
Go on, then.
I don't want any words with more than five letters in any of my suggestions ever again.
It is with great reluctance that I announce the indefinite suspension of the Ultimate Warrior. This suspension is a direct result of the Ultimate Warrior's failure to appear as advertised last weekend in Indianapolis, Detroit, and Pittsburgh. This suspension will be immediately lifted, however, as soon as the Warrior posts an appearance bond to ensure WWF fans that he will appear where advertised. However, the Ultimate Warrior is here tonight, as promised, and will wrestle Owen Hart. We remain hopeful that the Ultimate Warrior will soon post an appropriate appearance bond and return to action here in the World Wrestling Federation. Despite the immense popularity of the Ultimate Warrior, no one wrestler is above answering to our loyal WWF fans.
So, you may notice one massive glaring change from the end of King of the Ring, a show which ended with Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson and the Ultimate Warrior standing tall. Warrior seems to have transformed into Sid.
Yeah.
Well, that's because the Ultimate Warrior is now gone, and gone for good. After appearing at the monthly television tapings on June 24th and June 25th, the Ultimate Warrior failed to appear at a number of house shows over the following weekend, citing the death of his father as the reason for his no-show. On the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD released in 2005, Vince McMahon would claim that Warrior had been estranged from his father for the majority of his life and therefore did not buy this as a reason for Warrior missing the shows. Various other reasons would be offered for Warrior missing the shows. Non-payment of merchandise royalties, a non-authorised use of his likeness, unhappiness at his WrestleMania payoff, or the old classic of Warrior simply being difficult to work with. At the weekend shows that Warrior missed, the company would attempt to heel the Warrior to the crowds, having ring announcer Bill Dunn claim that Warrior refused to perform in a city like insert city here. Refunds were offered to audiences, with only a few dozen reported by the Wrestling Observer as being taken. Warrior would be written out of storylines on the 8th of July Raw in a semi-non-kayfabe manner. At the opening of the show, on-screen president Gorilla Monsoon appeared, announcing that the Ultimate Warrior had been indefinitely suspended. Monsoon said that despite the popularity of The Warrior, no performer was bigger than the WWF, nor were they above answering to the WWF fans. He said that The Warrior would be welcomed back if he posted an appearance bond, ensuring that fans could be certain that if they bought a ticket to see The Ultimate Warrior, The Ultimate Warrior would be there. Incidentally, this caused some resentment among the wrestlers backstage that a performer would be afforded the luxury of being welcomed back with opened arms, despite deliberately missing shows. On television, the WWF was also left with a problem that the 8th of July Raw, taped 3 weeks earlier, heavily featured The Warrior in a bout with Owen Hart and a post-match angle where he was beaten down by Camp Cornette. Monsoon closed his show opening segment by stating that The Warrior was there tonight and Monsoon would permit him to compete against Owen. Re-recorded commentary from Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler was added to the match, with Vince talking speculatively that he hoped this wouldn't be The Warrior's final WWF appearance, while Lawler hoped that it would be. To write Warrior out of the International Incident main event, Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson were flown into Stamford to tape segments where they would introduce a mystery partner to replace The Warrior, but we'll discuss that later.
So is the thing that Gorilla's saying about him being welcome back, that wasn't just for camera, that was an actual
thing. That's legit. They said if he posts that appearance bond, they will have him back.
Wow. So they really wanted to keep him then. Which doesn't really lead to all that stuff in the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior of people saying no, his reactions were down and people didn't really want to see him there and stuff. They actually really wanted him to stay.
Yeah.
Because as we've seen, like, the crowd are still really hot into him when he turns up. It's absolutely big reactions all around.
Like I said, we discussed last episode, or last WWF episode rather, how long would those reactions be sustained? But, you know, contrary to what they'd have you believe in that self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, the fan reaction is definitely still there.
Yeah, and I think it would have continued on for a fair while longer. Maybe, you know, it's not going to go for maybe another 6 months, but it would have carried on for a bit.
And they were obviously manoeuvring him into that main event scene by having him partner with Shawn and Ahmed against Camp Cornette. So they definitely had plans for him going forward that involved him being at the top of the card.
Yeah.
Do you think they handled it well from a business point of view?
The thing is, in the instance of somebody who's about to appear in a pay-per-view main event, you kind of can't just ignore it and just pretend it hasn't happened. You know, if it was someone in like an opening match or a tag team performer, you could have them just disappear on screen and not worry about it. But someone of the Warriors level, I think you kind of had to address it. Yeah. I mean, the angle that he participated on that July 8th Raw ended with Camp Cornette beating him down. So you did have a storyline explanation for him disappearing off screen. So you could have just as easily said, oh yeah, Camp Cornette decked him and he's injured and we don't know how long before he'll be back. So Shawn and Ahmed have found a mystery partner, but no, they kind of incorporated that non-kayfabe element of it into the storylines. So, yeah. The Ultimate Warrior's last ever WWF match would be at the July 25th, 1996 Superstars tapings, where he pinned Vader following a shoulder tackle in a dark match. Despite Vince and the Warriors' fallings out in 1991, 1992 and 1996, in late 1997, Vince McMahon, feeling pressure from WCW and the fallout from Montreal, would actually offer the Ultimate Warrior a five-year contract worth $750,000 plus royalties from merchandise paid at 35%, a full 10% higher than any other contracted performer at the time, working only 14 days a month.
Wow. A pretty sweet deal, actually. And, yeah, like you say, because there's a track record there of three fallings out and, you know, quite a lot of bad blood there between them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was he that desperate?
Absolutely.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, that late 97. 97 is a year that almost sinks the WWF despite their sort of resurgence. Mm. And obviously, having just lost Brett to WCW, you almost think it would have been an attempt to ensure that the Warrior is not another person that shows up in WCW and to just get a star back on your television show. How that sort of deal would have sat with someone like Shawn Michaels, probably not so great, but, you know, not that it probably lasted very long, but could you imagine an Attitude Era that features the Ultimate Warrior?
No, that's weird. When does he show up in WCW?
Ultimately, pun not intended, the Warrior would not return to the WWF, instead opting to sign with WCW in September 1998, where he formed his own stable to oppose the NWO, the One Warrior Nation, or OWN.
What?
Interesting.
Warrior would only actually participate in three matches for WCW. Firstly, a three-team War Games match at Fall Brawl, where he, as a part of Team WCW, alongside Diamond Dallas Page and Rowdy Roddy Piper, defeated the NWO Hollywood, comprised of Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart and Stevie Ray, and the NWO Wolfpack, comprised of Kevin Nash, Sting and Lex Luger. Secondly, a tag team bout on the October 12th, 1998 Nitro, where he and his former Blade Runners partner Sting defeated Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart. And finally, the infamous bout at Halloween Havoc 1998, where he was pinned by Hulk Hogan, conclusively revealing why he was signed by WCW in the first place, so Hogan could get his win back from WrestleMania 6. Mm. The match is terrible and widely mocked for the piss-poor flash paper ending, where Hogan attempts to throw a fireball in the Warrior's face, but instead ends up singeing his own eyebrows and moustache. Eric Bischoff would go on to call the match one of the worst pay-per-view matches, nay, main events of all time. The Warrior would make his final WCW appearance on the November 9th, 1998 edition of Nitro. The Warrior would retire from wrestling following his WCW stint, but would wrestle one final match on June 25th, 2008 for New Wrestling Evolution in Barcelona, Spain. Any idea who his final match was against?
Scott Steiner.
Is it somebody that we should know?
It's somebody that you will know.
Is it the Brooklyn Brawler?
No.
I really want to get this. JBL?
No. The correct answer is Orlando Jordan.
Wow. Orlando Jordan had the Warrior's last match.
Yes, correct. Whom he beat for the promotion's World Heavyweight Championship, which he immediately vacated following the bout.
That was worth it.
In his retirement, the Warrior would have a short-lived career as a public speaker, including gigs at universities, where he espoused his right-wing politics, yielding the well-known gem, "Queering doesn't make the world work," which he later attempted to defend as he simply meant that if everyone on the planet was gay, the human race would die out. Obviously, everyone needed that pointing out for them. Warrior would also maintain an online presence on his personal website where he wrote a blog where he addressed his grievances with various wrestling personalities, including Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, the British Bulldog and Lex Luger. In 2005, the book would seemingly close for good on any kind of relationship between the Ultimate Warrior and WWE when Vince and Company released the Hatchet Job DVD, The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. Mm. Seemingly produced with no other agenda than to simply bury the Warrior, i.e. there were no rumblings that he was going to sign with another promotion or anything. You know, there was no reason to produce the DVD.
Apart from that you put the Warrior's name on something, you're probably going to flog
make
a load
money
off of
it, yeah. The DVD featured a huge number of high-profile names, including Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, Bobby Heenan, Gene Okerlund, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, Ted DiBiase, and more, finding about 100 different reasons as to why the Warrior as a performer and as a person was a terrible human being. You've all seen that.
No.
You should watch it. It's astounding. Compared to like the reverence that they lauded upon him when he was in the Hall of Fame, it's quite nasty, actually. It is just... There's a few people saying one or two good things about him, but then it's about an hour of them just calling him a dickhead for various different reasons.
I think the best word to describe it is vindictive.
Yeah, it's quite nasty. And as we've seen, it kind of lies. All their stuff about it, because we've just watched all this 96 stuff, and all they're talking about, because it's brief, isn't it, the 96 stuff that they talk about.
But yeah.
They talk about, you know, when he came back in 96, it was no good and the crowd reactions weren't there. And this, that, and the other, and that's just all bullshit.
It's not true. Yeah.
So how much of the rest of it, of what they're saying, is just there to stick the knife in on Warrior?
Plus, it's unique in its existence in that it's the only DVD of that type that exists.
Yeah.
So there was one planned for Bret Hart, but he got on board before they had a chance to...
Was that the Screwed?
The Screwed. Yeah, the Bret Hart story was the original title of the Best There Is, Best There Was, Best There Ever Will Be set.
Really?
But when he got wind they were going to produce this Hatchet Job, he got involved to ensure that it wasn't one. So the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior stands alone as a DVD set produced solely to bury someone, basically.
Yeah, and I wonder if it does serve that purpose in that, I dare say, loads of wrestlers would have watched this and be aware of it and therefore will make steps whenever that something's being made about them to ensure that it doesn't end up like that. So maybe why it's the only one.
Possibly may have served as a warning almost.
But this was one of the biggest stars in your company. If you're burying him like that, doesn't that just make you as a company look stupid?
No, if you watch it, it makes them out to be generous and offering of chances. Mm, and
they're the victims.
And they're the victims. And this person that's come in and taken advantage of them and made them look bad and, you know, refused to get better at what he's doing and that kind of thing. That's the angle I would say it comes from.
There's a couple of cool bits on it. The bit where Sergeant Slaughter's talking about when he was standing and the Warrior's music hit and it was the loudest noise that he'd ever heard in his life and it made his ears ring.
Yeah.
There's some stuff like that which makes me think that there are enough people with amazing memories of what the Warrior achieved in his heyday that the new documentary is probably going to be quite good.
I would assume so. The other standout part of it is Christian cutting the WrestleMania 6 Hogan promo.
Which I do think is my favourite promo ever.
Which he seems to be able to do word for word by memory. Yeah. Which is pretty cool. And he does a good job of it as well. Hmm. The first rumblings of a new relationship between the WWE and the Ultimate Warrior would appear on July the 15th, 2013, when the Warrior was featured in a trailer for the upcoming WWE 2K14 game and announced as a pre-order bonus character. On the January 13th, 2014 episode of Monday Night Raw, the Ultimate Warrior would be announced as the first inductee into the 2014 class for the WWE Hall of Fame. He would be inducted the night prior to WrestleMania 30 on April the 5th, 2014, and would make his final ever WWF appearance on the April 7th edition of Raw, where he gave an eerily final speech to the wrestling world.
Yeah, it's kind of chilling when you look back at it now, isn't it?
Warrior, formerly James Helwig, died on April the 8th, 2014 in Scottsdale, Arizona, collapsing as he walked to his car with his wife outside of their hotel, a result of a cardiovascular disease. Since his death, the WWE have released a second Warrior biopic, this one titled Always Believe, this time featuring Warrior's widow, Dana, and his two daughters, Indiana and Madigan. I'm yet to see this one, although I expect it to have an entirely different tone to the self-destruction of one. Something Adam and I discussed the other night was maybe watching both and reviewing them as a pair, as I think it would be quite interesting to compare and contrast both documentaries. If that's something that you guys would like to hear, let us know and we will look into it.
Yeah, especially as I think... Well, it must have already begun, is that the WWE will sweep the self-destruction DVD away.
And, yes.
You know, nothing will ever be mentioned of it ever again.
I can't see it turning up on the network, put it that way.
Yeah.
Mm. Any final thoughts on the Warrior before we move on from him?
I liked his pyro.
It was my childhood wrestling hero. It was nice to see him back. Great hair.
Did he go before you kind of got a chance to get bored of him again?
Yeah, because we only saw him a handful of times.
Three matches.
And they were more or less classic Warrior squash bouts, with the exception of that Owen Hart match on Raw, which is actually quite long and quite competitive.
But like we said when we watched it, trust Owen Hart to have a good match with the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a look. It's probably one of his better matches that's ever been taped.
It's Sunday, July the 21st, 1996, and we are live from the General Motors place in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, in front of a crowd of 14,804, including 2,849 comps, for a live gate of $214,985 Canadian dollars. The show, despite drawing a pretty damn good crowd, and certainly for an in-your-house event, drew a pretty dire 0.37 buy rate.
Oh, that's really
wow.
Which is pretty much bottom of the barrel as far as those buy rates go, approximately 90,000 buys. In a dark match for the live crowd, Phineas Godwin defeated Jerry the King Lawler.
Ooh, what a weird match.
I bet that was a five-star classic.
Yeah.
So, the free-for-all, and the arena looks pretty massive.
It looks good, yeah.
Vince, alongside Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, welcome us. Where's Doc Hendricks and Todd Pettingill? This is different to the other free-for-alls.
Yeah.
We've gone straight to the announce team. That's unusual. There are Mounties on the In Your House set.
But none of them are the Mountie.
Sadly not, but they didn't stick around for the rest of the show. They were just there on the free-for-all bit.
They were there for a little while.
Were they there for a little
one
while?
Of them later.
Yeah.
Not a lot of attention was paid to them.
No.
So you can just see them in the background of a few shots.
We get highlights of the burgeoning program between Savio Vega and Justin Hawk Bradshaw, who enters alongside his manager, Uncle Zebekiah. We've mentioned Mr. Bradshaw a couple of times already on the podcast, but this is his first actual appearance. Justin Hawk Bradshaw, real name John Layfield, debuted in 1989 for the Global Wrestling Federation in his native Texas as John Hawk. He was primarily a tag team wrestler, winning the GWF tag team straps alongside Bobby Duncombe Jr. and Black Bart before winning the NWA North American title on January the 14th, 1995. Hawk signed with the WWF in late 1995 and debuted as Justin Hawk Bradshaw with Uncle Zebekiah as his manager on the 27th of January 1996 episode of WWF Superstars, defeating Bob Holly with a lariat. He's primarily been featured on Superstars, making his Raw debut on the 1st of April to lose to The Undertaker. His pair of matches with Savio Vega, one on the 18th of May Superstars and one on the 8th of July Raw, are the beginning of his first real WWF feud. This match is fairly basic, sort of punchy, kicky, brawly stuff, the highlight of which sees Bradshaw punch the ring post on the outside.
I think Bradshaw looks like Chris Hero in this match.
I happen to agree. There's something a little bit Chris Hero about the way that he
sort
looks.
Of tubby physique.
Well, slightly, but I think the hair as well.
Okay.
And the kind of beardy type thing that he's got going on.
But he does look huge. I mean, I wondered if it was the perspective.
Certainly next to Savio Vega, he looks massive.
Yeah. Savio Vega's got to be relatively short, hasn't he?
Yeah, Bradshaw sort of has to duck into Savio's offense, which should tell you something.
Yeah.
But I'd say huge in like all dimensions. And I don't mean like he looks obese or anything. He just looks like a beast of a guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Signs in the crowd, we want blood.
I noted that one down, yeah.
And Mike loves Coliseum video.
I noted that.
Yeah. It's crazy Canadians.
Bradshaw hits a big boot for a two count, and Savio hits a sweet spin kick in the corner, which sees him flip to the outside.
That I think was the best move.
That's the best thing he's ever done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It looks good, and it does actually get a pop. A second spin kick gets another pop from the crowd, and Bradshaw's kick out actually gets a reaction. Bradshaw and Zebakaya then seem to fluff the Ultimate Warrior Rick Rude WrestleMania 5 finish. With Zeb attempting to help Bradshaw get his foot on the ropes, but it doesn't look good, but it does get Bradshaw the win.
Mm. He's just kind of ends up holding one of his feet.
Yeah.
And not in any meaningful way, he's just holding his foot.
Moral support.
Yeah.
Post-match, Savio attempts to attack Zeb, but gets a clothesline from Hell for his efforts. Zeb then brands Savio on his shoulder.
What is the picture of with the branding?
I'm not too sure, if I'm honest. I haven't looked closely enough.
Kind of a bit smudgy when it's done.
Well, it's obviously not branding. It's like ink,
it's
isn't
ink,
it?
Yeah. He's not putting searing hot metal onto Savio.
But that's the inference.
Yeah.
Mm. Plus, if he did that, would that be a bit racist?
Probably be a bit illegal in some ways.
Yeah. Not much of a match, really. But
no, it was short. And the backstory of their match that we saw seemed to mainly consist of them whipping each other with straps and ropes.
Yes. Mm. Could you guess where that might go?
Some kind of strap match or a rope match?
Yes, correct.
Or a strap and rope match?
You'll have to wait and see which route they go down.
Oh, okay.
I was a little bit disappointed. I was expecting a better wrestling performance from JBL, to be honest.
We'll see how he progresses.
Yeah, that will be an interesting one.
Goldust and Marlena enter the arena, and we throw to a pretty cool video for The Undertaker that was shown on Raw the week before this.
That's brilliant.
It functions well, firstly showing various Taker moves and entrances. Then we get cut-ins and a deranged wail for Mankind and creepy shots of Goldust. This is followed by a malicious guitar solo wrapped around a version of Taker's theme.
Yeah, I love that guitar work.
See, I watched this alone and you two watched this together, and I knew you'd A, like this video, and B, like that guitar part. Yeah.
Well, I quite want to have a go at soloing over that. Okay. Over Taker's theme tune, see what I can come up with.
I thought this made Taker look badass, and
it's awesome.
It sort of helped to wipe away the 3 years of terrible matches we've watched.
It makes Mankind look really cool as well. It's like they've just slotted a deranged Mankind promo into an Undertaker promo. It's cool.
Compare this to the Third Man.
Yeah.
Stuff that we've just watched.
Night and day.
Yeah, night and day, or even something else that's completely opposite, north and south.
Ice cream and gravy.
Yeah.
No, really, really well done. And I can see why they get the mileage out of this by playing it a couple of times.
Yeah. It's good work, like you say, just from the perspective of showing you who a character is and making them look good.
Yeah, it's really great.
Back in the arena, Goldust has joined the commentary team. He quotes Dead Zone, 1983.
Did you think that Goldust looked like anybody here?
Not off the top of my head.
Father
I?
Ted Crilly from Father Ted.
What?
I didn't think this as well, but as soon as he said it, I think it's because the microphone.
It's like a headset.
Yeah, it's
and the
headset
hair that he's got. It looks like he's got like a Father Ted wig on.
Yeah, it is disturbingly accurate.
And they've gone for yellow dust instead of gold dust this week. That's my other note.
Is he also wearing like his old outfit this time as well? I thought he was wearing his original gold dust attire rather than some of the more modern ones he's been using.
He's been in the wash.
Mm.
I quite like his eye makeup in this, though.
With a little star around his eyes.
Yeah, the black stars around his eyes are quite good.
Yeah, so anyway, he quotes Dead Zone and says Taker will never forget the name Goldust before leaving. A video package narrated by Todd Pettingill builds up the main event, incorporating the substitution of the Ultimate Warrior. And we'll get into this a bit more later, but I love, love, love that they're making out that Sid has been in a mental institution the whole time he's been away. Absolutely brilliant. In the arena, Jose Lothario enters to Sexy Boy.
Yeah, we noted Sexy Boy, Jose Lothario.
Like, please stop doing that. Like, that's not appropriate music.
Again, they should have just given him his own theme music.
Go
they?
Down Chiquito's, borrow the CD, stick something on for
Savio
it.
Savio Vega's theme.
He enters for a verbal confrontation with Jim Cornette, hosted by Jim Ross.
I had great expectations for this, because it's Jose Lothario who's going to cut promos opposite Jim Cornette.
My favourite bit of all this was the lighting issues that they had, where they seemingly wanted to blind Jim Cornette to Jim Ross.
It kind of looks like they're caught in a nuclear flashpoint until they dial it back a little bit.
But then, like, they can't quite get the right level, so it's just like a kid's playing with the dimmer switch somewhere. Like the lighting guy brought his son to work.
Did you spot that when JR announces Jose, he gets booed?
No, I didn't, actually.
Yes, he does. Cornette, I thought, was decent here, but not as amazing as he can be. Jose, not so great.
Tough gig, though, for Cornette. How are you supposed to do this well?
Because he's Cornette and he can do anything well, sort of verbally.
That's true, but it's, when you're having a verbal sparring match with Jose Lothario, whose grasp of the language is not 100%.
Also, Shawn Michaels appears to be teaming with Seed and Johnson.
tell you what, though. Jim Cornette does take bump of the night for me. The selling of the Lothario punch was awesome.
Yeah.
He does take a good bump, doesn't he, Cornette? He always seems to be getting whacked.
But it's not just like a bump. It's an exaggerated comedy bump, but he does it well. Mm. So I want to laugh, not kind of go, oh, it's cheesy.
Have you ever seen where he breaks both his legs falling from scaffolds?
Yeah, you show me that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
That was another good bump. Yeah.
He sold that well.
Post-verbal debate.
So that's an awful thing to say. I can't say that. What am I saying, Paul? What's wrong with Paul Scrivens? Don't.
He can't say words with the letters D and G too close together.
Like, I want another one. What's another one with D and G in? Hedge.
No, there has to be a letter between the D and the G that causes the confusion.
Dog.
Well done. You can all submit things that have the word dog in them, because Paul can say it.
Hedge and dog. Hedgehog is similar to dog and
as
hedge.
Long as the dog isn't called Prodigy or Tragedy.
Yeah.
Post-verbal debate, Cornette goes to whack Jose with his tennis racket. But yes, Jose ducks and then clocks Jamesy for a pop. Vader appears, but before he can get to Jose, Shawn Michaels slides halfway across the arena.
Oh, that's amazing! But the precision of that slide, because he's not got... There's the little kind of table that they've got for the staging, and Vader's taking up like three quarters of the ring just because he's massive. And he just slides right between them with such precision, but it's like almost goes all the way through the ring.
You got to think the only way that he could do that with such precision is by having multiple practices.
Yeah, he's got to.
So he must have just had the setup in the ring and just tried sliding through to see where he could go.
No, I think Sean wings this sort of thing.
What if he'd have fucked it up, though, and slid right into that kind of lectern? That would have really taken the sting out.
But I noticed that he's been watching WCW because I noticed it wasn't broken, so he flips it over to make it look broken.
Yes, Michael slides into the ring and referees and agents follow in before anything can really happen.
Yeah, Pat Patterson. Was it? No, Gerald Briscoe.
I am back in the locker room area, Doc Hendricks, with Stone Cold Steve Austin. I have a question for you, Mr. Austin, at the King of the Ring. Wild man Mark Merrill was just one count away from defeating you. Now, many of your critics say that tonight the Wild Man is going to get that final count and defeat you here at the International Incident.
I say in 1 second, I'm going to knock the hell out of you, son. The whole world watched as the Wrath of Austin 316 unfolded at King of the Ring. First Mark Merrill, then Jake the Snake Roberts. On the eighth day, God created Stone Cold, and I'm rewriting the book. I will continue to whip everyone's ass in the WWF until someone's got the guts, the talent, or a machine gun to stop.
Hang on 1 second now, Mr. Austin. I want to go back and I want to show you some footage from the King of the Ring. Sure. That injury that you've spoken so much of since then, where the wild man Mark Merrow kicked you right in the mouth. Here we go. Now, as you see this, everybody, watch Austin's mouth. Watch this.
Wham! Deliberate, intentional. Oh, he had every bit. He was trying to put me out of pro wrestling, son, and I guarantee you, I'm going to whip his ass, and if Sable gets involved...
All right, we've got to go. From the locker room area, Kevin Kelly and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Another newcomer to the podcast, Kevin Kelly, is with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm. Austin threatens to knock him out.
Do you not think Austin looks a little bit odd in this promo?
He's still, not off the top of my head.
He's still just got the different beard, I think.
His facial hair is not quite right, is it? It looks weird.
He delivers a suitably venomous promo, claiming that he's going to do what he wants until someone has enough guts, talent, or a machine gun to stop him.
It's pretty good stuff.
Good line.
Yeah.
I think that's tempting fate. I wouldn't want to say stuff like that in case anybody did have a machine gun.
We get a clip of Merrow kicking Austin in the mouth, which Austin isn't impressed with, and he also alludes to giving Sable a kicking.
Yes.
Back in the arena, JR's mic isn't working, and as Jerry Lawler attempts to take over, some fans in the front row try and put a Burger King crown on his head. Wonder if that'll pay off later.
Do you realize just exactly what Jose Lothario did to me? Let me tell you something, you stinking punk. If you're not getting my teeth out, I'll sue you. But right now, I got news for you. I know Camp Cornette's going to win this match. I know so bad that I'm going to give a money back guarantee. If Camp Cornette does not win this match tonight, then I'm going to give everybody in this building, I'm going to give everybody watching on pay-per-view their money back. What? It may cost me $7 or $10 million, but I've got confidence in these men. There ain't no way we're going to lose tonight. And Jose Lothario, I'm losing my teeth and ruined my perfect smile that my mother paid for. I'm going to kill you myself. Tonight, Cam Cornette is taking his six-man tag. If you want a gang fight, you have just kicked us out.
Thank you very much, brother. Indeed, ladies and gentlemen, you don't want to miss this. Those of you watching on the preview channel, we're going to say goodbye. Pick up that phone order right now. Pay-per-view in your house. And Vader back there with the Bulldog and Owen Hart in along with Diana, down, and I would suggest it.
Davey, you're not going to let me down. I want the strategy. I want you to look at this, Shawn Michaels. I want you to look at this, Ahmed Johnson. And I want you to look at this, Psycho Sid, because the British Bulldog is not going to take no malarkey from nobody, right, Bulldog?
That's right. They brought Psycho Sid in. Well, this is no place for a lady, Jim Cornette. My wife's going to stay in the locker room, and we're going to take business, take care of business once and for all. Is that right, Owen?
We got a great cast right here. We look forward to knocking all three of you clowns out. Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson, and Psycho Sid. We're going to beat you better than an ugly red-headed stepchild. Is that right,
Owen?
That's right. That's right. And tonight, Jose Lothario, you're going to watch your boys go down. Shawn Michaels, you couldn't handle a British Bulldog last time in a single match. You ain't going to be able to handle him tonight. Ahmed Johnson, this man Vader, he's the only man that's ever beaten you in your career. And Owen Hart right here has a little message for Psycho Sid. That's no matter how bad he is, how big he is, a good cast will bring him to his knees.
It's on pay-per-view, ladies and gentlemen. Whatever you do, don't miss the WWF in your house.
Those kind of international incidents.
Live from Vancouver, British Columbia, General Motors. Please get set. This place is gonna rock.
Backstage, Camp Cornette is stood by. Jim Cornette claims that if Camp Cornette doesn't win tonight, he'll give everyone in attendance and everyone watching on pay-per-view a refund. It's an interesting tactic to get people to order.
Yeah. It'll cost him $7 to $10 million.
He keeps banging on about $7 to $10 million.
Not with that buy rate, it bloody won't.
And I've got to say, what a massive margin of error with your calculation. Can you not pin it down better than that?
Listen, Clarence Mason is a lawyer, not an accountant. Okay. Vader growls into the camera, "I'm coming, boy toy."
Yeah, that was rather menacing.
And kind of rude. I thought this was actually a pretty good free-for-all. It hyped the main event pretty effectively. The Austin promo was decent, and the Taker video was cool.
Yeah, there's not really anything bad in there, is it?
Jose speaking, but other than that.
Oh, yeah, apart from that.
The WWF's in your house is electrifying, exciting, and in a word, awesome. And on Sunday night, July 21st, it'll be extraordinary. It's sure to spark an international incident. The wild man, Mark Merrill, battles the King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin. The unearthly Undertaker has a date with the bizarre Goldust. And Shawn Michaels teams up with Ahmed and Sid to battle Vader, Owen, and the Bulldog. See it for yourself, live tonight, only on pay-per-view.
We open the main show with highlights of the Jim Cornette-Jose Lothario confrontation on the free-for-all before we get a sort of news-style graphic for the International Incident logo. Our opening bout, then, is the Smoking Guns versus the Body Donners. Not happy with building the tag team division around a woman, on the 24th of June Raw, the WWF began to build their main tag team feud around a woman feuding with a man dressed as and pretending to be a woman. When the Body Donners took on the duo of the Brooklyn Brawler and Jerry Fox, Sonny joined the announce team, and alongside Jerry Lawler, the two hurled abuse at Cloudy. Sonny said that she had left the Body Donners because they weren't capable of getting the job done, and that once they lost the titles, they were useless to her. Although, she actually signed her contract to manage the Godwins before they beat Skip and Zip for the titles, so that was weird. Sonny also alluded to the fact that she would soon be bringing in a singles wrestler to manage, saying that two men aren't enough for her, so I've heard. Post-match, Cloudy chased Sonny away from ringside before making some advances towards Jerry the King Lawler. Over the last few months, we've been fairly critical of the WWF's tag team scene, but on the 29th of June Superstars, the WWF presented the angle that basically it had all been building towards. Jim Ross interviewed Sunny, who claimed that who she was on television wasn't really her, and she was ashamed of how she'd behaved with Phineas Godwin. Phineas came to the ring, where a repentant Sunny encouraged him to tell her how he really felt. Phineas mumbled, "I love you." Sunny asked him to speak up as she wanted the entire audience to hear what he had to say. Phineas shouted, "I love you." She then asked Phineas to close his eyes and pucker up. Instead of receiving the long-awaited kiss, Sunny wound up and slapped the horny hog farmer. Sunny went on to say that someone like her could never be with someone like him, and the Smoking Guns, who were stood at ringside, entered the ring and beat down Phineas. Fortunately, Henry Godwin and Hillbilly Jim would run down to ringside to save Phineas, clearing the ring of Billy and Bart. Henry and Jim then cornered Sunny around ringside as Phineas held a slop bucket over her head. Phineas, encouraged by the crowd, would attempt to slop Sunny, but found himself unable to do it. He wound up for a second attempt, but again, couldn't do it. Sunny, sensing that she still had Phineas under her spell, smiled and smugly blew her admirer a kiss and turned around to leave, only for Phineas to finally douse her with the slop. Credit where credit is due, everyone was really good here. Sunny in particular was amazing, portraying an absolutely smug bitch so well that I actually found myself rooting for Phineas Godwin.
Wow.
This was so good, it shouldn't have been on Superstars, it should have been on pay-per-view, or at the very least, Raw.
Okay, that's
if you can find this angle anywhere, I thoroughly advise watching it.
Is this a special slot bucket or just an ordinary slot
bucket? I gather this was the special one that had been left in the locker room. Okay. Yeah.
Is it on the network?
Yes, that episode of Raw is on the network that's got the highlights of this angle on cool. it. Why is this a non-title match?
Yes, why is this a non-title
Yeah, that's
match?
Weird.
I have no idea. Although I guess kayfabe-wise, you could put it down to Sunny not having to give out tag title matches, so she's not going to. Mm. For the record, the last time the WWF Tag Team Champions were in a regular tag team match on pay-per-view and didn't defend the titles was when the Brainbusters took on the Hart Foundation in the opening match of SummerSlam 1989.
What?
Whoa!
And even then, that was more to do with the fact that the Brainbusters had won the tag titles after the regular match was announced, rather than them being existing tag team champions and not defending.
That is weird.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Out comes Sunny, looking super awesome with the Smoking Guns.
Yeah, kind of like leather, bra, denim shorts combo.
Jerry Lawler has begun making his pervert noises, so we're going to see him morph into that character now. Is this a good time to mention the rumours about Sunny and Vivid Video?
As good a time as any.
Have you read this then, Paul?
I've received some tweets from people.
Saying?
Well, mentioning a rumour and then... I don't know. I kind of read them and thought I'll stay out of it. it's kind of what I thought.
Do you know who Vivid Video are?
I have an awareness.
They're like a porno company.
Okay.
And who have they made pornos with, Adam?
They do the China stuff. Oh, so they're kind of like a niche porno company and operates with ex-WWE performers.
So she was threatening to block and delete people on Twitter who asked her about it, but Vivid themselves are saying that actually, yes, we're close to signing a deal. So we'll see what happens. Episode 39 will be. Russell Math's horse is sick. He thinks it's dying. He won't be here.
I'm really confused about what's
Do you want to review a porno with Sunny in it?
No.
I didn't think so.
I mean, I definitely think, what would Mrs. Scriven say about that?
She could watch it with you. I don't think Randy Orton's in it, but...
Probably quite realistic.
It could definitely happen in real life.
Yeah.
They've offered the money to do it. Maybe, Adam, that can be your jewel present to Mrs. Scribbins, striptease and a copy of Sonny's porno. Is that appropriate to buy your mate's wife?
I'm going to answer that no. That's not appropriate. Giant marshmallows are.
Fair enough.
She showed us that we didn't really need a manager. In fact, we needed more of the fans than anything else. And we want to thank everybody today. But right now, it's time to get the serious business. Now, let me tell you, man. You know, Sonny played mind games with us for so long, but I think with Cloudy, we showed we can play our own mind games. And now, with the fans finally behind us, it's time to get down to business.
All right, then go ahead. Let's get down to business
then. Let's do it.
The Body Donners have stood by, sans Cloudy. Zip thanks Cloudy and everyone who wanted to be their manager. He says Cloudy made them realise that they don't need a manager. And Lawler claims that Cloudy has been on so many blind dates, she's going to get a free dog.
That doesn't even make any sense.
No, but it is funny. What did you make to the Body Donna's promo?
It was full of charisma.
Unremarkable.
Mm. Yeah, that's about right. The Body Donna's slap fans' hands on the way to the ring to show that they're babyfaces now. Harvey Whippleman is the referee. When did this happen?
Yeah, why? We were sitting there thinking, why? Why is Harvey Whippleman the manager?
They reference it, don't they, on commentary?
Yeah, Vince brings it up and Lawler claims that Harvey can't see past the end of his nose. So
I thought, you know, something was going to happen with Harvey Whippleman in this match.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't.
So they had the angle where he was at ringside making notes, but it was never presented as like he was doing research for a job interview.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, odd one. We get a Buns of Steel chant for Sonny. Well, I presume it's directed at Sonny.
You'd hope so.
Skip.
Billy Gunn's curtains are fantastic. Get that man a role in Dawson's Creek.
Yes, he could, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Or in the Backstreet Boys.
The Body Donna's open with a double back body drop to Billy and the Gunns regroup on the outside. Lawler claims, RE, the Body Donna's, that Sonny took two unknown talentless wrestlers and made them the world's best known talentless wrestlers.
That's still quite a good promotion.
Vince tells us that Jake Roberts is unable to be here with us tonight, and Lawler says he's in the Betty Ford Clinic.
He also says something about the grapes of wrath, although Jake Roberts has got the wrath of the grapes or something like that, yeah.
Bart and Zip open with Zip getting the advantage via a series of arm drags that he won't let go of. I quite like that.
Yeah.
The Body Donnas work a series of quick tags, continuing to focus on Bart's arm until Bart fights back with a forearm from his free arm. Bart gets a tag to Billy, who seems rather engaged with the front row.
Yeah, there's a lot of... was something going on there?
I think they were just hurling abuse at him, and he seemed focused on hurling abuse back.
Yeah, it's like... I didn't know if that was going to work into part of the storyline of if it was a particular character development they were trying to push, or if it was just genuine, he was having an argument.
Yeah, a bit like that one where those fans were just having a go at the bulldog in the front row. I think it's just a bit like that.
Mm. But Billy seems more animated...
Yes.
And in throwing stuff back. The Bulldog was just playing up for it and receiving the punishment, but I don't think he was giving it back like Billy is.
Skip gets a head scissors and a messy exchange ends with a rocker dropper from Billy. JR calls Sonny a Jezebel, claiming she's changed the Gunns. There's a phrase that JR will use a lot in the Attitude Era. Mm.
It's good.
Billy misses a splash in the corner and Skip works on Billy's arm. JR tells us that there's no team as quick in the WWF as the Body Donnas. Vince claims the Godwins, and JR wonders if he means the Gunns, and Vince says, no, I mean the Godwins.
He bangs on about it a few times during this pay-per-view. What is he on?
I think he's got the Godwins confused with somebody else.
Yeah.
On the outside, Sonny feigns a collapse, and as Skip attempts to help her, he gets a slap and a double clothesline from the Gunns.
What was happening here?
Well, the camera showed Sonny dropping to the ground for no reason, so Skip looked like a proper dumbass for going over to help her.
Because she drops down and sort of like winks and smiles at the camera, doesn't she?
She's not their manager anymore. But why?
Well, I think she's trying to play off that she was their manager.
And they still care about her.
And non-kayfabe, that's now his fiancé. So, you know, maybe that's what they were angling at.
Yeah.
Billy drops Skip face first on the apron and rolls him back in the ring for a two count. Billy tries another cover, but Skip bridges out of it.
You know, in this infamous incident where everyone puts whatever they like in the bucket of slop for Sonny?
Yes.
Was Skip in the locker room at the time?
I can't imagine any man would do that to his own fiance.
No, but I'm not saying that he'd do that, but do you reckon he'd say no to the other people?
I can only assume he wasn't in the room, Adam.
Let's hope so.
Lawler tells JR if stupidity was an Olympic event, he'd be a gold medal winner.
There's already, you know, the partnership between JR and King is...
starting to build.
It's just great, isn't it? And it leaves, as the pay-per-view goes off, it leaves Vince just being like that third wheel that's...
He's somewhat superfluous, yes.
Yeah, he's not really contributing anything.
Bart whips Skip across the ring into the corner hard twice, but Skip reverses a third and heads to the top. Bart catches him for a nice power slam, but doesn't go for a cover.
I thought that was a really nice little sequence there. And those Irish whips were hard, but the ring makes a funny noise.
I'll second this. There is some funny noises coming from the whips to the turnbuckles.
Yeah. Maybe it's because Mankind's underneath there.
Yeah.
Well, not just Mankind. Undertaker's also under there.
And a big ass smoke.
Oh, machine. Sorry, I don't want to ruin anything for later.
But nice catch from Bart, though. Yeah.
The guns fuck up their double team move where Billy leapfrogs over Bart, which gets a laugh from the crowd.
And I think then he starts throwing shit back at that front row again, doesn't it? Because they must have mercilessly ripped on him.
I like the way he just blames Bart. So he's just had to go. It's just like he just kind of runs up, but he doesn't really improvise very well or kind of make the most of it. It's like it's probably happened before at some point in kind of on tour.
Yeah,
it's you should probably have something to cover it by now. Yeah.
It just looks a bit silly.
Plus, trying to get the guns over as heels, having the crowd laugh at them is perhaps not the best way.
No.
There seems to be a cameraman whose sole job is to just stand behind Sonny.
Mm. Best job in the company.
Yeah, very possibly. But none of the other female performers tonight have it. There isn't one for Sable and there isn't one for Marlena. There is one for just standing behind Sonny.
But Sonny's got the, I'd say, lower 15% of her buttocks on show.
Okay.
Whilst the others haven't.
I hear there's another similar cameraman job going today. Nice. Should apply.
Maybe.
Job for a cameraman?
From Vivid.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to suggest you should apply with your media background, Adam, but maybe you shouldn't.
Maybe I should.
No, you shouldn't.
While Harvey attends to Zip in one corner, the guns give Skip a kicking in their corner. This goes on for a good while. Skip gets a hope spot from a crossbody, but Bart counters with a big clothesline. A tag to Billy, who attempts a flying nothing from the top rope, landing ball first on Skip's knee, taking both men down.
It is good ball selling from Billy.
Yeah, the selling on that was absolutely stellar. But this is a different Cornette selling. When he does that kind of over-the-top silly stuff, he just does it in such a way, and his expressions are, that I find it funny.
Right.
Whereas I thought this was super, but super silly, but not in such a good way.
Okay.
Because Cornette isn't a serious performer.
And Billy should be.
Yeah, Billy should be, particularly, I think, if you're a heel.
Skip finally gets the lukewarm tag to Zip, who runs wild on the guns. He's not over as a face.
No.
He tosses Billy to the outside, which proves to be an unwise move, as when he runs at Bart off the ropes, Billy trips him from the floor. While Harvey Rippleman argues with Sonny, Bart holds Zip in position for a sidewalk slam, presumably looking for Billy for their double-team finish. This is a really awkward moment because Billy is nowhere. Instead, Skip dropkicks Bart from the top rope and Zip falls into the cover, getting the three count and the win for the Body Donners at 13:05. Sonny is furious post-match.
Yes.
Yeah, she throws a bit of a paddy.
Thoughts on this one?
Not the best.
I'm going to say unremarkable again.
Yeah, it's not absolutely awful, but, you know, if I was watching this DVD again, I would skip it.
On one hand, it was nice to see a tag team match given a decent amount of time on pay-per-view. On the other, this match wasn't particularly great, with some messy spots and a really long heat sequence on Skip. The crowd wasn't really into the Body Donners' faces either, as evidenced by the lack of response when Zip finally got the hot tag.
I didn't really like the finish either. The dropkick was a bit of a soft touch, really, to win the match. It didn't seem like
a big enough deal.
Yeah.
And I half wonder if Billy wasn't there because they were trying to get over that he's arsing around with Sonny, but it just looked bad and it looked wrong.
Yeah, I didn't mind that idea. I just didn't think the execution was quite right on it.
Yeah. If you ever want to complain about modern tag team wrestling in WWE, watch the WWF's tag division in 1996.
Yeah.
And be really grateful.
It's pretty dire.
Standing by right now, ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Perfect, apparently with Camp Cornette. Mr. Perfect, are you there?
I'm certainly here, Vince McMahon. And I'm going to tell you right now, this locker room is in an outrage. Everybody saw what happened earlier. Let's go to this footage and show everybody. Jim Cornette.
I want to tell you exactly what happened just a little bit earlier while Vader goes crazy. You see right there, Jose Lothario pulled a switchblade on me. Jose Lothario, while I had my back turned, he pulled a switchblade out and tried to cut me. I was able to get out of the way, and then Shawn Michaels tried to attack me from behind and gang jumped me, but Vader thankfully came into my rescue, and together, me and Vader were able to stand off Shawn Michaels and Jose Lothario. But I'm going to tell you something, in this six-man tag here tonight, there ain't going to be 12 or 14 of Shawn Michaels' friends to pull Vader off. Now, tonight, I have guaranteed Camp Cornette's going to win this match, because if we go, I'm going to refund everybody's money here and everybody watch the pay-per-view, and that's going to cost me about $7 to $10 million, and you guys can't let that happen.
Don't worry, Jim.
It's the cat is in the bag. The British Bulldog, Vader, and the King of Hearts. He's going to take those guys once and for all. But it's no place for a lady. My wife, Diana, is going to stay in the locker room for this one. It's going to be so gruesome. Isn't that right, Owen?
Absolutely right. Now, we all know I've already knocked Ahmed Johnson out. I've already had Shawn Michaels carried out of the ring. And now you, Psycho Sid, I can't wait to nail you with my cast and see you carried out. Just like Shawn Michaels and that idiot Ahmed Johnson. We are the guys that are going to do it. Tap Cornette.
Exactly right. Now we'll say one more thing before we go, Psycho Sid. You think you're crazy? Well, Vader's dough ain't all baked and he ain't wrapped too tight. And he's coming after you.
Mr. Perfect is stood by with Camp Cornette, which Diana Hart still appears to be a part of.
Not really doing anything, just hanging around.
Cornette claims Jose pulled a switchblade on him in their free-for-all segment.
Yeah, I saw it. True.
He says that in the main event, there won't be 12 or 14 of Sean's friends to get Vader away from him. He repeats his vow to refund the audience's money if his squad lose tonight. And Bulldog says something about the cat being in the bag and that Diana will stay backstage tonight.
Yeah, it's like, it says like, it's no place for a lady, so she'll stay in the locker room. I was thinking, is the locker room a good place for a lady?
Not in mid-90s WWF with Shawn Michaels around.
I just saw the way, the fact that when all this is happening, Vader's just prowling around in the background and making strange growly noises. Not really doing anything.
Plus, I know the phrase cat out of the bag is an accepted phrase, but I'm not sure cat in the bag is.
Yeah, he said something about a frog's fat ass last time, didn't he?
Yeah, it just sounded wrong. Our next bout is Henry Godwin versus Mankind. A bout between Mankind and Jake the Snake Roberts was announced for International Incident on the July 1st Raw when Roberts joined the announced team during a match between Mankind and Duke the Jumpster Drosy.
Are you taking a mic?
Roberts was subjected to a verbal tirade from Jerry Lawler throughout his announcing tenure, and post-match Lawler began to get physical with Jake, slapping him around the face. With Roberts about to retaliate, Mankind attacked and put the snake down with a mandible claw, requiring various officials to carry Jake away from the ringside area while Lawler hurled more abuse. You may have noticed that the Mankind-Jake Roberts bout was not mentioned at all during the pre-show, which is due to the fact that the WWF were trying to conceal that Roberts no-showed this event. The first hints the WWF would receive that all was not right with Roberts would be the Thursday before this show, when Roberts was due to do a promotional interview with a local radio station in Toronto, but the station called WWF officials saying that Roberts had failed to phone in. The Mankind-Henry Godwin bout is the WWF's late substitution for the announced match, and although the WWF is trying to frame Jake's absence as being due to rib injuries, let's just say the real reason is coming from Jerry Lawler's mouth instead.
Right.
Mankind enters in the darkness, crawling into one lit corner of the ring.
Good characterization again.
Henry Godwin brings Hillbilly Jim out with him, but no Phineas. And Mankind, stood in the ring, looks bemused by the hillbillies dancing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was another brilliant bit of characterization.
Well, we were talking here about you couldn't have more polar opposites in terms of entrances and music.
Yes.
With these two, because you've got such somber, brooding,
ominous music,
and then the little jiggy kind of country music. It's a great juxtaposition.
But they both squeal like pigs.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that they could have picked that would have been a better match? Like at this last minute, have they got anyone hanging around in the locker room that's not really doing anything?
No, I think Henry Godwin's sort of a fine substitution. He's all right. He's not a terrible wrestler.
No, good wrestler, like his stuff, but it just seems so odd that you've got, you know, menacing, deranged Mankind and then fun-loving hillbilly hog farmer.
But it makes for a good dichotomy.
Yeah.
You know what I'd have quite liked? I'd have quite liked to see Bob Holly again. It's been a while since we've seen Bob.
Yeah, he's still knocking about, but he's not getting many dates this year. We will see him in 96, don't worry. As expected, Jerry Lawler is going to take every opportunity to rip on Jake Roberts in this bout, beginning with telling us that Roberts has barthritis. Every night he's stiff in another joint. Mankind does look like a freak with his patchy hair and scarred arms.
Yeah, he does.
I'll tell you what else makes him look really good or makes him sound very good is JR.
Yeah.
Like, does a really good job of selling Mankind as a threatening individual.
And a lunatic.
Yeah, it's the most dangerous man in the World Wrestling Federation. He just keeps going on that stuff like that, and it sounds believable.
I suppose JR's got quite a vested interest in it, in that he's the one that's convinced Vince to sign Mick Foley.
Yeah, well done, JR.
Well, I think it's quite interesting. If you were a non-wrestling fanatic and you were kind
of... You were fanatical about not wrestling.
If you weren't a wrestling fan and you flicked channels and you happened to come across Mankind, I think you could genuinely think that this man is disturbed.
Yes, yeah, he plays it so well.
And I think
well, yeah.
you don't really see that level of...
Commitment
to character. Yeah, from many other people.
As Henry calls to the crowd, Mankind attacks him from behind and bites Henry on the ropes. Henry fights back with a forearm and a power slam before clotheslining Mankind to the outside. Mankind re-enters, rakes Henry's face and begins beating the big hog farmer down. Henry gets a sort of pick-up spinebuster and explodes with fists on Mankind's face. Mankind gets a kick to the ribs and an elbow to the face, followed by a facebuster and an elbow drop. Mankind squeals like a pig, better than Henry, and rips some of his own hair out.
Mm.
That must hurt.
You'd think. I mean, I assume it's not hair extensions.
I would assume not also. Mankind sets Henry up in the corner, does a little spin, and runs knee first into Henry's face in the corner.
Mm. Nice.
With Henry's head draped over the ropes, Mankind hits a leg drop and brings up the protective mats around ringside.
This is where the match picks up for me.
Mankind tosses Henry to the floor and hits a neck breaker. Back in the ring, Henry fights back with fists, backing Mankind into the corner. Mankind reverses and splashes Henry. Mankind attempts a charge, but Henry moves and Mankind throws himself head first into the corner post.
Oh, yeah. That was... Ooh.
Looked sore. It sounded sore.
Yeah.
Henry hits a clothesline, but Mankind drags him through the ropes to the outside. When Mankind attempts to follow, Henry slams him from the apron to the concrete, which makes a dull thud.
Yeah, it's this selling of like the character of Mankind. Is that must have hurt massively? But such is the idea that this man doesn't feel pain, and he pretty much gets straight back up again. And it's a recurring thing, isn't he? No matter what big move is hit on him.
He gets up.
Quick back up, and it's the selling of the nothing really hurts him, and he's kind of a masochist and likes pain.
Yeah. So, Paul, as someone who throughout the duration of the show has been an advocate of liking things sold, how do you feel about Mankind doing that? Is it something you're okay with as it fits the character?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't massively kind of pick up on that. And I think if I don't pick up on it, it's a reason because it kind of feels right.
Right.
It's when things like that are notable to me.
That it feels
it's
wrong.
It stands out because it's just, I'm thinking, why is he doing that? And I didn't really get that feeling here. And I don't know whether that's just a bit of bias on my part just because I'm a fan of Mick Foley and maybe I go easier on him than other people. But I do think it would fit the Mankind character.
And I think that's something JR puts over on commentary, like, if this man loves pain, what can you do to him?
Yeah, and nothing keeps him down. I think
treat him really nicely. That's what you do.
King does a good job of selling that as well. Yeah, like what can you do to this guy? He loves pain. You can't stop him. It's good stuff. In fact, everything that Mankind's doing, I think it's down to the very fine details, the way that he sort of marauds around the ring when Henry's down. He's kind of hunched over and he makes weird noises and his very motions are kind of odd. Great stuff.
So, yeah, my next note says, somehow Mankind is the first person up and back into the ring, where Henry looks for the slop drop. Mankind, however, hangs on to the ropes and then applies the mandible claw for the win at 6:54. JR wonders if there is a counter for this manoeuvre, as Vince tells us that it's paralysing. Mankind then legs it down the aisleway for no discernible reason.
Mm. Well, yeah, he just runs away.
There's a bit later, you know, when they do a little compilation of all the best bits where they do it in, like, really quick speed.
Yeah.
It looks really bizarre.
Like Benny Hill.
Yeah, it is a little bit Benny Hill.
And credit as well to Henry. I thought his selling of the claw was really good. The sort of, he kind of writhed and flopped around and gradually just toned down until he was
done.
Yeah, I think it was really good.
I felt, this might be just my poor recollection of the previous WWF show that we watched, but it felt like Henry Godwin put up a lot more resistance than The Undertaker.
Okay. Really? That's your poor memory.
Is it?
Yeah. The Mankind Undertaker match went 20 minutes and was a bit of a war.
Well, no, but just in terms of the actual mandible claw.
Oh, okay.
So I think...
Yeah, but Undertaker had been hit in the head with the urn.
Yeah, I know there's the kind of... Yeah, it was a more physical match, but I kind of feel the only weakness with the match really was that I feel with the status of Mankind... that should have been a slightly quicker win in terms of his finishing move. Not the rest of the match, but the finishing move should have finished him quicker.
Yeah, I thought Mankind actually worked pretty hard in this match to make it something.
Yeah.
Given that it was a nothing match with no reason to happen, he worked hard to make it something. And that bump on the concrete looked and sounded sore. Yeah. And obviously, yeah, it had no build, and Henry Godwin is a substitute for Jake Roberts, so it's a bit of a nothing match. But I thought he did well enough in his performance to make it something.
I really quite enjoyed it, actually. I thought it was okay.
Well, it was very short, and I'd say the first perhaps 2 minutes were fairly unremarkable, but the last three or four were really good.
Let's take you now, ladies and gentlemen, to the WWF Superstar line. Brian Pillman back there.
Can you believe this one, McMahon?
What?
I got the Body Donnas back here trying to lay a bunch of sanctimonious garbage about the competitive spirit, how they went out there to compete as athletes. Let's face it, their only motivation was hormones. Sonny, TNA, you name it, that's all they want. Admit it, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Pillman. There's no telling what Mr. Pillman is going to say.
They don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the uncensored.
Now, wait a minute. To me, it does mean something.
It's the WWF Superstar line as never before.
They're crying about the double teaming. The guns were pulling on them. They want to double team Sonny.
All right, knock it off. All right, JR. Woo-hoo! Superstar line.
Call us on option A, the WWF Superstar line.
Give me the phone.
It's option 8, 1-900-734-WWF in the United States. 1-900-451-3332 in Canada. Post-match interviews with the winners and the losers of every match with Ray Russo and, yes, Brian Pillman.
What's missing here is a WWF Superstar line segment with Brian Pillman accusing the Body Donnas of being motivated solely by hormones in their match against the Smoking Guns. Pillman said that while the Body Donnas moaned about the Guns double-teaming them, when all they wanted to do was double-team Sonny.
Hmm. You what?
You genuinely used the phrase double team.
Okay.
Yeah. What's also missing here is Vince apologising for Brian Pillman's remarks.
Are there many points into this early signing of Pillman where Vince must be thinking, oh, God.
What have I done? They do admittedly on TV put him over as like, you don't know what he's going to say. So
yeah,
I think they understand what they're getting. But yeah, this isn't on the DVD, but it is on the network version. Because I watched that earlier today as well.
Oh, right. That's odd that they put it on the network version and not on the DVD.
Well, I think if they've got good enough quality copies of the pay-per-view version, they actually use that. Where they haven't, they use the Coliseum Home Video releases.
Right,
so King of the Ring was the Coliseum Home Video version, but this one was like the pay-per-view broadcast.
Okay.
Mm. Up next is a rematch from King of the Ring, Mark Merrow versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. This rematch from the semi-finals of the King of the Ring tournament was announced on the July 1st Raw when Stone Cold Steve Austin joined the commentary team for Goldust's match with Mark Merrow. However, Merrow's feud with Austin would not be the main focus throughout the bout. Instead, Vince McMahon alluded to an incident that had happened between Sable and Marlena over the weekend. Jerry Lawler would attempt to clear up what had actually happened. Apparently, get this, Sable was removing some rather heavy suitcases from her car boot whilst wearing a particularly short skirt. Marlena allegedly noticed some, and I quote, static cling on Sable's dress and attempted to fix it. Following a commercial break in the Goldust Merrow match, the announcers would claim that during the ads, Marlena had made advances towards Sable and that Mark Merrow had had to separate the two women. Late on in the bout, with Merrow and Goldust down, Marlena would move around the ringside and stand next to Sable, staring at her. This would distract Merrow, allowing Goldust to pick up the win. Yes, somehow, Adam is now booking 1996 WWF.
I was going to say, this sounds like the greatest storyline ever.
What was wrestling thinking?
Sadly, Adam, it will get dropped fairly quickly.
That is a crying shame.
Despite not receiving a tremendous amount of build, this does have a logical reason to happen, given Austin's injury in their previous match.
Yeah, it was quite interesting that the angle that the show of the injury, it shows what fine margins they actually have.
Oh, yeah.
In wrestling, because, you know, you could say, oh, it was clumsy of Merrow, but I just think it's one of those things that happens in wrestling.
Yeah, it's you're not going to hit 100% every time, and this was one of those sort of erroneous incidents where his boot was simply out of place and clocked Austin in the mouth.
Isn't it? It's fine margins.
And I wouldn't describe Mero as someone who's particularly dangerous in the ring. It's not like an Ahmed situation or something. It was just unfortunate.
Yeah.
But they've made it into a storyline.
Fair play.
Stone Cold Steve Austin enters with a lovely Stone Cold symbol on the back of his pants. I'm just going to put this out there. This symbol is most certainly not main event and will not last very long at all.
What is the symbol? I've forgotten it already.
Yeah, it says Stone Cold with something around it. I think it lasts this pay-per-view and the following night's Raw taping, if I remember correctly. It's not around very long.
See, given the story that you gave us about how the Stone Cold thing came around, I think they should just portray him as a tea drinker.
What?
With a Stone Cold tea?
Stone Cold cup of tea. And I think what should happen is he should be in quite a good mood. Have it, like, somebody every week, a different wrestler, can bring him a cup of tea. And then it would just get mad when it turns out to be Stone Cold tea.
It'd have a different effect, wouldn't it? If at the end of, like, your WrestleMania, he's Stone Cold wins together. And people are lobbing in mugs of tea. And they just get everywhere.
As good as a catcher as Stone Cold Steve Austin is.
If he tries to catch a thrown mug of searing hot tea, it might end badly for him.
He stood on the top turnbuckle pouring hot tea down.
Smashes the mugs together, pours hot tea down his face.
I'd love to see it. I think it'd be better if it was in Lost Styrofoam cups.
Well, I suppose now you can get like those Frappuccinos and things in cans, can't you? So you could perhaps do those.
Slightly fancy for Steve Austin, I think.
you don't think he'd be a Frappuccino kind of guy?
I think he's a much more regular coffee kind of guy. I think he'd plain tea.
Just have a bottle of scotch.
More scotch.
It would have been a very different character, wouldn't it? Stone Cold Steve Austin was a...
If I'd have booked
was
him.
A coffee drinker, not a beer drinker.
Mark Mero, along with Sable, follow, while Austin stands in the ring looking mean. He also pulls an awesome quizzical face as Mero parades Sable around the ring. Lawler, for the first time, I think, describes Sable as a good-looking babe.
Yeah, because up to now he's described her as horrible-looking or something.
Yes, yeah, and don't change the channel, her face always looks like that sort of thing. His tune, yeah, has most certainly begun to change. They lock up to start with Austin going straight to clubs and fists as Lawler urges Austin to hit Mero in the mouth, something he repeats for the entire bout. Mero fights back with fists of his own and ducks a pair of Austin clotheslines for a crossbody. Mero goes to an armbar, taking Austin to the mat. I thought this was a pretty good opening.
Yeah, yeah.
Sable wanders around ringside with no cameraman attached to her behind. Austin reverses Mero's armbar into a headlock and drags Mero down for a two count. Mero turns it into a head scissors, which Austin bridges out of into a pin. Mero then bridges up and both men look for a backslide, but Austin breaks it and knees Mero in the gut.
The whole bridging out thing was awesome.
Yeah, good strength.
Another
show
really
by,
good exchange.
By Mero.
Much more technically proficient than I'd expect.
Well, this is somewhat of a revelation for you, isn't it? Yeah. Knowing Austin only as a brawler.
Yeah.
Austin pre-neck injury is an entirely different wrestler.
Did these two face each other many times in WCW?
Yes.
So they're pretty used to working together. Yeah.
Mero with quick jabs to Austin and a big fist takes Stone Cold down, with Austin rolling to the outside to regroup. Austin stalks Sable on the outside, but is jumped by Mero with a double axe handle from the apron.
What is with his sort of like preoccupation with Sable? Because he said something in the promo,
yeah.
And now he seems to be stalking harassing her for no real reason.
Just mind games.
I guess it's mind games. I guess it fits into his nasty character that he's building.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one bit in this early on in the commentary where JR says that Stone Cold is destined for superstardom, to which I thought, yeah,
bang on.
Well done, JR. And Vince retorts with, you could say the same for his opponent. Which I thought, interesting.
Not so much.
Yeah.
Destined to get powerbombed by his wife.
I think that kind of says it all about the difference between JR and Vince.
Yeah. We get some obviously redubbed JR commentary. Did you spot that?
No.
If you listen carefully,
there's stuff that he's re-put in on the network version. It's Vince talking about the superstar line and stuff like that.
Ah.
The two men head back inside and Mero hits his rolling prawn hold for a two count, which thankfully this time doesn't bust Austin's lip.
But he pretends it does.
Well, yeah. Mero pauses, perhaps showing sympathy for Austin, but Austin attacks Mero and tosses him to the outside, which gets a face pop.
Yeah.
I thought that was genius. I thought the acting from Stone Cold was absolutely spot on there. Really nice, weaselly.
And that gets the pop, like, you know, the way that things are changing. But a point to make is this crowd's dead good.
Yeah, good crowd.
Yeah, this crowd's sort of like buzzing for the whole thing.
Hot.
There's two particular members of the crowd we'll discuss later on, but we'll get there.
Yes.
Austin poses on the ropes to a mixed response. With Mero down on the outside, Austin drags the wild man to the corner, monkey flipping him into the ring post.
It was too close to do that. It just looks a bit weird, doesn't it?
Mm. Austin brings Mero up onto the apron and chokes him over the ropes before kneeing Mero throat first onto the guardrail. More pops for Austin. Austin stomps Mero in the head as he attempts to get back into the ring. And when Mero manages to get back inside, Austin hits a knee from the second rope for a two count as Sable pounds on the apron. Austin whips Mero to the ropes and hits a devastating looking elbow upon Mero's return. Mero sort of bumps and slides into it. Yeah. Looked really nice. Austin slows things down, sitting on Mero's back and grabbing at his chin. Austin then sets Mero up on the ropes, slapping Mero on the back of the head before missing a boss man attack. Austin, however, is fine, but when he attempts to bulldog Mero, Mero seems to crotch Austin on the corner, which gets boos.
Mm. That whole little the boss man attack and kind of, you know, him doing the old whole bit of outsmarting Mero there was quite interesting.
As Austin looks for the stun gun, Marlena and Goldust's Usher wander to ringside. The stun gun spot goes on for a while, ending with Mero sort of getting a Hurricane Rana, taking both men to the outside.
That was the really messy spot.
Yeah,
it was weird. I thought they were. I didn't pick up that they were going for the stun gun there. It just looked a complete mess.
Yeah, it's quite bungled. It doesn't get him. It doesn't drop him in the right place, and then it's clear that he's supposed to go for the head scissors out the ring, but he's not facing the right way, so he has to pick him up again and turn around, and then they do it. Just, I don't know.
Awkward to watch that.
Yeah, it looks awkward.
And then you've got the stuff with Marlena and Goldust Usher wandering down.
Does that go anywhere?
No.
So that's what I was thinking. That's another thing. It's like Harvey Whippleman, right? Where's this going?
Doesn't he give it to Lawler and Lawler just gives it to Vince?
Yeah, and then nothing else happens, yeah.
That's bizarre.
Goldust Usher, yes, gives Jerry Lawler an envelope, which Lawler gives to Vince, as Mero hits a cannonball from the apron onto Austin.
That was nice. I did like that.
Mero hits an awesome-looking moonsault off the apron onto Austin.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which gets him a pop, but also some boos.
What is these people's problem with Mark Mero?
I think they just like Austin. Mero rolls Austin back into the ring and hits that spinning splash thing that Alexa Bliss does for a two count. You don't know Alexa Bliss, do you?
No.
She's an NXT lady. Okay. She's quite nice. Let's call it that. Mero hits the sparkle splash for a two count. Mero mounts Austin in the corner for 10 punches before setting up for a Hurricane Rana, but Austin shoves Mero, crotching him on the ropes.
Bullshit.
The crowd pops for Austin. Austin looks for the stunner, but Mero grabs the ropes. They need to borrow that WCW board we talked about last episode, so no one's repeating spots. And avoids it before hitting a slingshot leg drop from the apron for a two count.
I quite like that.
Yeah, I like that.
It looked unusual because I think he has to twist himself in midair to make sure he hits it right, but it's pretty good.
Austin clips Mero's knee from behind as Mero is mildly distracted by Marlena in the aisle before hitting the Stone Cold Stunner for the 3 at 10:48.
Yeah.
I liked this match.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Other than that one messy spot, it was pretty decent, really.
I thought this was probably better than the King of the Ring effort, as for the most part it was a bit tighter. And most sort of reviews I've read of the two say the first one's better, but I think I like this one more.
No, I'd say that this one's better. I'd say this was definitely an above average match.
There's a couple of bits in it, like I say, the kind of bungled stun gun spot and the whole Marlena Usher thing. I just didn't understand why it was there. If it went somewhere, then it'd have a reason. And I think we missed part of Mero's cannonball. You didn't see a good shot of it because we're too busy focusing on the Usher.
It sort of happened in the background, didn't it? Because we're watching Marlena give the envelope, or the Usher rather, give the envelope. I definitely think these two have chemistry.
Yeah.
And despite having seen them face off on the last two shows, I'd definitely watch them wrestle again, as I think they've got more in them as a pairing, and I think it's something that could go somewhere.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't mind a different stipulation.
Some sort of stakes added to the match now they've sort of faced off twice would be good. The Marlena stuff, yes, dragged things down a notch, especially as the distraction came when pretty cool stuff was happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, what was in the envelope Marlena gave to Lawler, Lawler gives it to Vince and it's never mentioned again.
Yeah,
maybe that could be a suggestion.
Yes, in fact, you can tell
us. What was in the envelope?
What was in the envelope?
What's in Alan's drawer?
Interesting to hear the massive amount of face reactions for Stone Cold.
Mm.
This is just a month after that promo.
Yeah, yeah, it's done him good.
It started
but
already.
But we are with a different crowd, aren't we?
And the signs in the crowd as well.
Bizarro Land, as they're often fond of calling Canada.
Are the crowds in Canada normally this vocal and this into it? Are they good crowds?
Yeah, I think from the perspective of they get less shows. So same as when they come over here, they tend to get really intense crowd reactions because we don't get it, you know, 5-6 times a year, whereas, you know, a New York or a Chicago or something might get 10-12 events a year, whereas Canada doesn't, England doesn't. So the people that show up are more vociferous in their reactions, I would say.
That makes sense.
In the crowd, Bob Backlund, yes, is campaigning in the wrong country.
It's brilliant, though. But that, again, goes nowhere. It's just, oh, he's still there. He's still doing it. He's in Canada.
They can't vote for him. Wrong country, Bob.
Yeah, but good effort.
We then get a repeat of the Undertaker music video. And, yeah, as I've discovered, this wasn't on the original pay-per-view broadcast as it was introduced by the dubbed-in JR commentary. Instead, it was like a promo for SummerSlam. Our semi-main event is The Undertaker versus Goldust. No stipulation, just Undertaker versus Goldust.
No casket.
No nothing. On the June 24th Raw, when The Undertaker took on Stone Cold Steve Austin, Jerry Lawler attempted to interview Paul Bearer and question him on his actions at the previous evening's King of the Ring. Bearer refused to answer a single question posed by the King. A mid-match advert would encourage viewers to call the Superstar line to find out why Paul Bearer may have cost The Undertaker the aforementioned bout. On commentary, Vince McMahon announced that The Undertaker would be facing off with Goldust at International Incident, and later on in the bout, Goldust wandered down to ringside, along with Marlena, to join the commentary team. Goldust claimed that The Undertaker would not rest in peace in their sequel. When The Undertaker went for the tombstone on Stone Cold, Goldust threw
his wig.
And he advances on his wig.
I genuinely don't know what you're after here, Stuart.
Gold dust threw gold dust into the Undertaker's eyes.
Oh, it's the one thing we didn't want to happen.
I thought you'd get that. He's done it before.
Yeah, it was obvious, really.
It caused the DQ. Post-match, Jerry Lawler would again attempt to stir up trouble between The Undertaker and his longtime manager, Paul Bearer, while Bearer attempted to prevent Taker from assaulting the King. Don't know why. Goldust, Marlena and the Usher enter. Why isn't Mantar still a part of their little crew? Shame.
Is he gone?
He's gone.
Yeah.
We get highlights of the casket match from Beware of Dog as JR tells us what a tremendous match this will be and that Goldust has been a lot more physical of late. Yeah, ask Ahmed. Vince says that Goldust is the most bizarre individual ever in the WWF as Lawler chimes in with, "What about Jim Ross?" "What?" asks Vince. Never mind, response to all that. Really awkward exchange on commentary. And JR offers nothing to it. Taker's music hits to a pop as the lights go out, and he and Paul Bearer walk slowly to ringside. Paul Bearer is reluctant to give the urn to the referee. It's not Earl Hebner. He's not going to steal it.
Why is he giving the urn to the ref?
I don't know. Just look after this for me, mate. I've got some managing to do. Yeah. And the ref's lot, I've got to count some pins.
And then he just gives it back to him?
Yeah. Lawler says he hopes they never cremate Jake Roberts as he'd burn for 4 days. Goldust is reluctant to enter the ring, and Lawler claims that the movie Braveheart is named after him. There's a lot of movie references.
There is
here.
Loads of movie references.
Goldust spends the first 3 minutes of this match stalling.
It's really slow paced.
Including hiding behind poor Jimmy Corderas and using him as a shield. Goldust's outfit on this evening, I would describe as hungry in the bottom area.
Yeah. His,
you can practically see his anus.
Yeah, his butt is well defined in this, shall we say.
You commented on this when we watched it, yeah.
Did you?
No.
Goldust rubs himself in front of Taker and gets a throat thrust before bailing to the outside. Goldust wanders some more around ringside and pulls Taker to the outside, but gets another throat thrust. Taker then grabs Goldust by the throat and seems to be setting up for a chokeslam. What we get, however, is a bum first drop from about 3 inches onto the steel steps. Mm. I would not describe this as a chokeslam.
No. I imagine a full-on chokeslam onto steps would be incredibly painful.
But a bottom first drop.
a little bit of a bump.
Yeah, yeah. Goldust rolls around on the mats outside the ring, selling this devastating manoeuvre. Taker gets bored of waiting and heads back to the outside and slams Goldust's head into the steel steps. Taker then picks the top of the steps up and threatens to throw them onto Goldust. But when Marlena covers the former Intercontinental Champion and the referee asks him not to, Taker just says, yeah, all right then. Taker rolls Goldust into the ring and backs him into the corner, choking him. When Taker moves away, Goldust tries to eat the turnbuckle pad to untie it.
It kind of looks like he's trying to kiss the turnbuckle. It's quite bizarre. Why didn't he just untie it like everyone else does?
He's such a bizarre individual.
He is unsuccessful and Taker rams Goldust's head into the turnbuckle pad. An Irish whip into the opposite corner leads Goldust to walk into an Undertaker clothesline followed by a leg drop for a two. Lawler tells us that Goldust's physician is...
Dr.
Strangelove.
Yes. Goldust finally gets some punches in, but Taker quickly fights back, again backing Goldust into a corner. As Taker looks for old school, the crowd picks up a rest in peace chant and he hits it for a pop. Marlena looks nonplussed or bored on the outside.
She does look bored.
You said bored.
But she doesn't do it in a way like Sable looked when she first turned up, like it's looked like a deer in headlights.
Yeah, it's not blank, it's like deliberately bored.
Yeah.
So it's part of the character.
Yeah.
I think Sable just really didn't know what to do with her face, so just didn't emote in any way.
Yeah. Taker misses an elbow but sits up. Goldust clotheslines Taker to the outside, but Taker lands on his feet and drags Goldust out with him. Goldust rams Taker's head into the apron and tries to bring Taker back in, but Taker hits a sort of stunner over the ropes for a pop.
Mm.
Goldust returns to the turnbuckle he was snacking on earlier and has managed to remove the protective pad. Goldust manages to whip Taker into the exposed turnbuckle as JR attempts to sell its devastating effects. Taker goes to the outside and Goldust follows. Goldust struggles to remove the steel steps, but does manage to drop them across Taker's back. Goldust then taunts in-ring taboos.
Yeah, he's still got quite a lot of heat from the crowd, isn't he? I think he's doing less of the overtly homosexual acts, isn't he? They're still there, but there's nowhere near what it was.
No, he's not asking him what rigor mortis is to his face. No.
But he's still picked up he's still got that same heat that he had as before.
Although there's a lot to talk about with Goldust, I think the in-ring aspect of his work so far
has been
a real disappointment.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
Particularly after you know, the first thing that we saw of him was the Bash at the Beach.
Yep, tag match.
94,
yep.
Which he was really good in. It was my kind of MVP.
Yeah.
And that one I thought was brilliant. And it's such a disappointment to see the quality of the wrestling in the matches. I mean, it's great that he's got such an interesting character, but it seems to have just come at the cost of in-ring performance.
Yes, I'd agree with that entirely.
The character, the promo, the storylines, the vignettes, that's all been really good, really interesting. But yeah, I think you're right. It's the in-ring work is nothing to shout about at all.
In the ring, Goldust sits on Taker's back and wrenches on the dead man's chin. Another rest in peace chant rings out to the delight of Paul Bearer. Taker fights back and hits a big boot before trying to lift Goldust up for the tombstone. This sloppy attempt ends with Taker rolling Goldust up in a small package for a two count. While the spot was clearly botched, seeing Taker do that move was actually pretty cool if out of character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And JR even says, that's the first time I've ever seen him do that. I get that it was kind of born out of necessity, if you like.
Yeah.
Like but it was an attempt to save the spot.
But it's good that he could do it and just pull it off when it's something that he wouldn't be used to doing.
Well, he's never going to do it on King Kong Bundy, is he?
Taker hits his flying clothesline and goes for the tombstone again, this time nailing it. For some reason, Taker takes an eternity to cover and the referee takes an age to count.
Yes, that's it. Like, to be honest, it was about an 8 count by the time the referee started counting.
The reason for this is then revealed when Mankind appears coming up through the ring, attacking Taker, and Mankind applies the mandible claw as the bell rings, giving Taker the DQ win at 12:07. Mankind then drags Undertaker under the ring and crawls out of the hole as smoke appears from under the ring and the lights flicker. Paul Bearer yelps at ringside.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys noticed that there was something that looked like probably a craft knife that he used to kind of cut the ring open that the referee then kicks or somebody who takes it away on the outside.
I didn't spot that.
No, I didn't.
It was an interesting little detail.
Mankind looks in the hole and surprisingly enough doesn't get dragged down into it as another rest in peace chant rings out. Mm. I don't know about you, but that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for a hand to come.
Yeah, I was waiting for it for a choke.
And there's loads of smoke pouring out the hole again, isn't there?
While Mankind stares into the hole, Taker appears through a hole in the other side of the ring and attacks Mankind and the two brawl backstage.
Am I the only one here thinking, how the hell are they going to do the main event now? That was my reaction.
Sellotape?
Yeah, well, apparently so. Yeah, a bit of masking tape.
Vader will be able to work over sellotape, right?
They've got other canvases, haven't they? So they'll just put another one on.
Well, I had a couple of themes on this. Firstly, that it was very silly.
Yeah, very silly.
The finish or just the match in general?
The finish.
Both.
What is this mystery about what's under the ring, that you can get pulled under the ring into hell?
It's where Hornswoggle lives.
No, it's where they keep all the tables and sledgehammers.
Yeah, but, and thumbtacks and trash cans.
And secondly, like, how did Mankind get under there? We saw him run away at the end of his match.
He must have done it in Taker's entrance while it was pitch black.
Ah, I didn't think of that. Yeah, or, that's the only way it could have been done, really.
Or magic. Don't rule it out, boys.
I thought this was probably better than their casket match at Beware of Dog, but
yeah, it was all right.
Everything I said earlier about Austin and Mero having chemistry apply the opposite to Goldust and The Undertaker, because I just don't think they click together.
Yeah.
No. I think the characters could certainly do some interesting stuff. As we said at Beware of Dog, if you remember that, Adam, that the build-up was actually pretty good in terms of their characters, but then in ring they just did not seem to mesh, and I think this was true again here.
Yeah, and you've always got the added disappointment that they've both got amazing entrances.
Yeah.
And it looks so cool when they both come out. And then, yeah, the in-ring action's just so...
Can't stand up to it.
Nothing, really.
I didn't particularly enjoy this. I mean, the angle at the end was silly but interesting, but the match itself was not good.
At ringside, the announcers discussed the Mankind Undertaker feud as the fans in the front row managed to ever so delicately place a Burger King crown on Jerry Lawler's head.
It's perfectly done. Mm. It is perfect. Well done to that guy.
And when Lawler notices, he calls for security. And did you spot the security guy just laughs?
Somebody turns up, though.
Yeah, no, and he does, and he just laughs.
No, there's a guy. It's not immediately there's a guy standing behind the commentary team.
Taking the
crowns and stuff.
I'm almost tempted to nominate that man for my MVP for managing to do that.
All right, Kevin Kelly back here in what appears to be the boiler room. A situation, folks, just unfolded as we saw between The Undertaker and Goldust, and all of a sudden the mysterious Mankind appeared. Now, I want to ask you, Goldust, is there some kind of allegiance between you and the deranged Mankind?
Mommy couldn't stay anymore because she couldn't stand me, Billy. She didn't leave because of you. She left because of me. Kramer versus Kramer, 1979.
Mommy, I think the dead man is a very bad man, Mommy. I can tolerate what he tried to do to me, but not when it comes to a maternal love. You see, Undertaker, Mommy doesn't want you to hurt her anymore. And what Mommy wants, her little boy provides. Mommy, after the JoJo Miller incident, you told me my hands were made to create beauty, not destruction. But I can't control my mind anymore. I'm getting very, very angry. Mommy, the dead man is about to find out that destruction can be beautiful. A nice day.
We then cut to backstage where Mankind and The Undertaker brawl in the dark, or as Vince calls it, a boiler room of some kind. How does he know it's the boiler room? Does he have the schematics for this arena?
I'm sure he would. I'm sure if you're preparing for commentary for a major wrestling event, you'd want to plan for the arena.
A Coliseum home video exclusive tells us The Undertaker and Mankind will face off at SummerSlam in a boiler room brawl. Kevin Kelly is stood by with Marlena and Goldust, the latter of which is laid on top of some sort of locker or cabinet type thing. Kevin asks Goldust about some kind of allegiance between he and Mankind. Goldust quotes Kramer versus Kramer, 1979, and Mankind enters. Seen it?
I've never seen it, no.
Me neither.
Is it about custody?
It's about divorce, yeah. Let's hope you never have to watch it, Paul.
Okay.
Scrivens versus Scrivens.
Mankind says he can stand what The Undertaker tried to do to him, but not what Undertaker tried to do to his mommy. It's not clear who mommy is, but I presume it's Goldust at this stage. Goldust holds Mankind's hand and rubs his arm as he cuts his promo. Mankind then smacks his head against the metal cabinet Goldust is laying on.
And it looks like he actually headbutts the padlock, which probably would absolutely kill.
Yeah. This was very, very weird. Cool. but very, very weird.
Good stuff from Foley. Like, really cool shout. I love his shouty, unhinged promos, the wicked. And just, I think it's the fact that it's in kind of shrouded darkness as well, yeah, is just kind of creepy.
What would you make of a sort of burgeoning alliance between Mankind and Goldust?
As a stable, yes. I wouldn't like. I don't think I'd like to see them as a tag team.
Right.
I'm not a massive fan of it, I'll be honest. A bit odd.
I think it's extra strange. You could go to even weirder places.
And why is Kevin Kelly just hanging around there conducting his interviews in that kind of location?
That's his job, man. Roving reporter.
Mons and the King of the Ring, the WWF Championship match was marred by an ugly incident. Shawn Michaels solidified his status as leader of the new generation with a victory over the British Bulldog. But Shawn's celebration unleashed a fury within Camp Cornette. Cornette's three thugs raced into the ring and viciously assaulted the champion. The attack was finally throttled when Ahmed Johnson led the charge along with the Ultimate Warrior. As a result, it was announced that all six would do battle in a special tag match at International Incident. Then Gorilla Monsoon made this stunning announcement.
It is with great reluctance that I announce the indefinite suspension of the Ultimate Warrior. This suspension is a direct result of the Ultimate Warrior's failure to appear as advertised last weekend in Indianapolis, Detroit, and Pittsburgh.
As Shawn and Ahmed scrambled to find a new partner, Camp Cornette sent a message with this attack on the Ultimate Warrior. Dive chest area. Unbelievable!
Step into that spot to be their partner in that six-man tag after what we just did a little while ago to the Warrior.
Jim Cornette, we don't bluff. This is the World Wrestling Federation, boy. You gotta know when to hold them and know when to fold them, and you should have folded. Surprise, surprise. Look what we have for Camp Cornette.
My psycho shit!
You're looking at me! And you're probably asking yourself, Shawn Michaels, what have you got and done?
Cornette questioned the sanity and the allegiance of Psycho Sid, but he wasn't about to take any chances. Last Monday on Raw, Camp Cornette seized upon what they thought would be an opportunity to ambush Shawn and Ahmed. As Shawn celebrated his title defense, Cornette sprang a trap.
Cornette!
Yeah!
Cornette's running away!
Hey, stop those guys! Don't let them get Jimmy!
Hey, wait a minute, they're heading out to the parking lot!
Stop them!
Hey, it's an ambush! It's a guy that's an ambush!
Camp Cornette didn't leave!
Vader, Bulldog! Yeah. Yeah.
Look at his psycho sick! He could have killed somebody, McMahon! Get out of there, Jimmy! Get a car, get out!
Partner or adversary, will anyone be safe when the formerly institutionalized 6'9", 313-pound Psycho Sid teams up with Ahmed Johnson and Shawn Michaels against Camp Cornette? We're about to find out.
Well, gentlemen, almost anything that could happen has already happened here tonight at In Your House International Incident. But, Shawn, it's got to concern you. What is Jim Cornette up to, being that he is guaranteed that Camp Cornette will defeat the three of you tonight?
Well, first of all, I'd really like to thank you for referring to these three as gentlemen. My goodness, you talk about understatements. That is definitely an understatement. Look at these three musketeers. Now, Camp Cornette, I know that you wish that all you had on your hands was a little bit of sword fighting between us and you, but you've mentioned it before, and now I'm going to mention it. You said this is going to be a gang fight. Well, take a look at my gang. We've come here, and I've told you once, I'll tell you again, you shouldn't bring a knife to a gunfight. Ahmed Johnson and Psycho Sid are going to be backing up the Heartbreak Kid. And one way or another, we're going to put you three cats down.
Ahmed?
You know, Mike, what I'm going to say, Doc. The talking is done. Now it's time to talk it the way you walk it, Cornette.
See, what he's trying to say is this, my friends. The game we play tonight is real simple. You walk the aisle, six men enter, but only three men survive. In the game we play tonight, I am the master, and my friends Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnsons are going to be there with me at the end. And when the smoke clears, baby, what's going to happen?
I tell you what, one person I wouldn't want to be is Jimmy Cornette, and three other people I wouldn't want to be Owen Hart, Bulldog Invader, what are you going to do when Master Psycho Sid gets a hold of you and Ahmed Johnson beats you around? And boys, please beware of some sweet chin music, because if it happens, you're going down and it's going to be over.
The same promo from the free-for-all hyping the six-man tag match airs before we get a promo from Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson and Sid. What do I have to do to get one of the T-shirts that Ahmed is wearing?
No, that's cool. I thought it was just an Ahmed Johnson T-shirt, but it is the...
Yeah, so it's got Ahmed, Shawn and Sid on the front, and I didn't notice the back has Vader, Bulldog and Owen on it until Ahmed came out.
Yeah, it's cool.
Badass.
Why has only he got one of those?
I don't know.
Probably only one size, and it's for giants.
Shawn quotes The Untouchables, 1987. Shouldn't have bought a knife to a gunfight. Ever seen that?
No.
Yes.
That...
Good film.
...is a fucking great movie. Okay, you won't get this because you've not seen the film, but Adam... Another Untouchables quote that I thought could be applied to wrestling. So if we go back in time a little bit to Halloween Havoc 1995, where Hogan pushes the giant off the roof and then runs away. You know that scene in The Untouchables where Kevin Costner fights the guy on the roof and he falls off and falls through the roof of the car?
Yeah.
And he comes back in and they say, "Where's Nitty?" And he goes, "He's in the car." He should have done that with Hogan and the giant. Ahmed does some incomprehensible shouting. I did manage to decipher some of it. He calls Doc Hendricks Mike, and not for the first time, I will add, and says, "The time for talking is over. It's time to see if you can talk the walk."
Splendid stuff.
Sid does some comprehensible shouting. I'm betting Adam loves this.
This was amazing. Angry, shouty Sid stuff when he doesn't get... In fact, when he gets it wrong, it's hilarious, but when he gets it right, it's just brilliant.
It's time for our main event. Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson and Psycho Sid against Vader, Owen Hart and the British Bulldog. Aiming to prove their dominance as a three-man unit, on the June 24th Raw, the Camp Cornette trio of Vader, Owen Hart and the British Bulldog defeated the combination of Aldo Montoya, Barry Horowitz and Savio Vega. Well, come on, that's better than beating VK Wall Street, Mike Enos and Dick Slater. Mm. Their bout on the 20th of July Superstars against Bill Payne, Rex Royal and Kevin Kruger may not have been as much of a challenge. Following the announcement of the Ultimate Warrior suspension on the 8th of July Raw, announcers Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler speculated upon who Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson would announce later on in the show as their third man.
Mm.
Vince and Lawler offered a number of suggestions throughout the show. OJ Simpson. He needs the money, apparently. That streaker from Wimbledon.
Oh, was that the year? Was it Richard Krycek?
Must have been.
Yeah.
John Travolta.
Phenomenon. Why? They're saying something about phenomenon, aren't they?
Yes.
He can predict the future or something like that.
Who?
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 No, who?
No, who?
Who?
We could do this all night.
Jose Lothario.
Yes.
Yokozuna.
No.
Mr. Perfect.
No.
Anthony Quinn.
Who?
No, Anthony Quinn.
Who is Anthony Quinn?
He was a very old, at the time, actor who had just had like a child in like his 80s or something.
Okay.
Yeah, the James Doohan method.
Or Brian Pillman.
See, that's a more interesting suggestion.
With Jim Cornette chiming in that, and this is genuine, might be some bum from the local Texaco. So, Michael the Geordie.
Texaco.
And Texaco again.
The show would end with Shawn and Ahmed revealing that Sid would be their partner, with Cornette having a heart attack on the split screen. Sid then cut an excellent whispering shouting promo,
yes,
as Vince, in one of his better commentary efforts, sold Sid's return with aplomb.
Mm. I don't think that it was great.
I liked it.
Psycho Sid!
Yeah. That was a pretty good impression.
It's not as good as his the first time Sid came back, the old Shawn Michaels, "What have you done?"
Yeah.
That was way better.
But I did like this, that Sid in his promos, like, Shawn Michaels, yeah, you've opened the gates of hell twice.
Oh, and that's just fantastic.
And then Cornette's just absolutely going mental on the other screen, like, we're not getting in the ring with him, he's mental.
Yeah.
On the 15th of July Raw, singles champions Ahmed Johnson and Shawn Michaels defended their Intercontinental and World titles in matches against the WWF Tag Team Champions. Ahmed would pin Bart Gunn and Shawn would sweet chin music Billy Gunn. When Shawn returned through the curtain to celebrate with Ahmed, Cornette baited the duo into chasing him by throwing coffee or something into Shawn's face.
Hot coffee?
It wasn't sold as being hot.
Right, he's back to stone cold again.
What Shawn and Ahmed found would be an ambush from Cornette's trio. Help, however, was not far away, as Sid would speed to the rescue, binning his car into, well, some bins, and chasing away the heels.
He kind of crashes into, like, a kind of skip type thing, doesn't he? And it just...
We watched
full,
this.
Full throttle, it's amazing.
I absolutely pissed myself when this happened. I posted the video of this on Facebook last week, and if you've never seen it, watching it, it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But who thought this was a good idea?
To
put Sid behind the wheel of a car and to get him to drive it quickly near people.
I'm just glad the cameraman wasn't about 3 foot forward of where he was.
But it worked beautifully.
Yes, it was hilarious and glorious at the same time. I'll also quickly mention that on the 1st of July Raw, Shawn Michaels defended his WWF title against Marty Jannetty in an absolute cracker of a match. This being Marty, however, it was the opening match and not the main event. So main event status from the point of view of facing the WWF champion, but it was the opening match. But it is dead good, so go and watch it if you've not seen it.
Okay.
Shawn enters first for his squad as fans run to ringside. The WWF champion, as ever, is accompanied by Jose Lothario. About halfway down the aisle, fans are so desperate to get near Shawn that they knock the barriers over to get to him as Jerry Lawler wets himself.
Yeah, he pisses himself on commentary. It's great.
It was funny.
Shawn, to his credit, actually takes this in his stride, and before he goes to the ring to do his usual poses and pyro, he doesn't throw a paddy over people touching him or anything.
I think he even helps a few of them up, doesn't
he? Yeah. Vince tells us that Ahmed is calling his belt the People's Title. Is that because he can't say Intercontinental? Or because they don't want to ask him to say Intercontinental? Sid enters last and for some reason gets a huge pop.
No, for a very good reason.
Yeah,
he cut that promo, then he cut that promo, and he crashed that car.
Okay.
I've got to say, he's stupidly over.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
I love Sid.
We'll get to this as we go through the match, but yeah, it's weird. He pulls great psycho faces on the way to the ring. When Sid jumps up on the apron, his pop gets even louder. Mm. In the ring, Shawn and Sid hug as Lawler reminisces about the time Sid turned on Shawn. So they're sort of keeping that angle alive that can Shawn trust him because...
He's unpredictable and he's a psychopath.
Camp Cornette enter as a unit to Vader's theme. Their heat isn't great, but intensifies a bit when they pose in ring. Lawler speculates that there are too many big egos on Shawn's team. Ahmed and Vader look to start, but Vader wants Shawn, as does the crowd, so Ahmed makes the tag. Vader taunts Shawn before they lock up. Vader lifts Shawn up, but Michaels responds with fists. Vader, however, responds with a single fist, knocking Shawn down. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Michaels ducks a pair of clothesline attempts and looks for a Hurricane Rana. Vader wants a powerbomb, but Shawn, with a mild assist from Ahmed, completes the move. A clothesline from Shawn knocks Vader down, and a running crossbody takes both Shawn and Vader to the outside. Shawn sprints back into the ring and baseball slides Vader before hitting a huge pescado over the top rope.
It was a nice, lively start, wasn't it?
It's kind of a bit of a theme of Shawn Michaels' matches, isn't it? Where he starts off with a really crisp, quick series of offense before the match almost gets underway, but he kind of heats the match up
with
all his quick and good offense.
And people are into it.
Yeah, it's great. Great stuff.
And crisp, I would say, is the word usually for it.
Yep.
When Michaels attempts to dive at Vader on the mats, Vader moves and Shawn smacks onto the metal guardrails. In the ring, Vader backs Shawn into a corner and hits body shots as the crowd chants for Sid. Vader looks for a back suplex, but Shawn flips out of it and tags Sid.
Yes.
The crowd pops as Sid enters and wails away at Vader with fists, kicks and a clothesline. Owen and Bulldog enter and do that awesome heel thing where they literally just run into Sid's clotheslines. He actually only just has to stand there with his arm out. Sid tosses Owen and David to the outside before clotheslining Vader out with them. The face trio pose in the ring as the crowd goes mental.
And with good reason. This has been a great opening to the match.
Owen re-enters and tries to attack Sid from behind, but instantly regrets it, getting a clothesline for his efforts. Sid tags Ahmed and Owen swings for him, but Ahmed ducks it and executes a trio of German suplexes.
But they're not really.
Yes, you heard that right. They are German suplexes.
It's just like Chris Benoit.
But they looked bad And Owen seemed to land on a single shoulder each time, which was probably sore, and not how I've ever seen anyone else land German suplexes.
It was just odd. It was like a German suplex with, you know, some degree of rotation in there.
You've got to say, look, if you can't do one well, why do three?
But this is right back to everything we've ever said about Ahmed. He's skipped wrestling for dummies and gone straight to advanced wrestling 403.
Yeah. I'll do chaining German suplexes. That'll be a good idea. Can you do one? No, not really.
Well, it's about as good as his attempts at diving over the top rope.
It's just like it is insane, absolutely insane, and it's fairly insane that Owen was willing to take it.
You got to feel.
I felt sorry for.
Yeah, you got to feel sorry for Owen. I mean, after the first one, he just must be thinking, "Oh shit,
I agree to take another two of these." Ahmed goes for a big elbow drop, but Owen moves and tags the Bulldog.
Is that where he does his massive elbow drop? But he's about
grunt.
3 foot away from it. And he dives like 6 feet into the air and screams his head off and lands nowhere near him.
It is, the distance between him and Owen is comical.
And it's his shout. I like the way that Ahmed shouts when he does big moves.
It's like he gives too much warning to his opponent and they just walk off.
Davey wails away on Ahmed, but Ahmed reverses an Irish whip and gets a spine buster. Ahmed hits a botched-looking Pearl River plunge, but Vader breaks up the pin to booze.
Yeah, early big move.
Vader enters and slaps Ahmed around in the corner as more Sid chants ring out. Ahmed fights back and pummels Vader, but Vader gets back up and hits a big splash in the corner to the IC champion. Vader unloads with fists on Ahmed and looks for a second splash, but Ahmed catches Vader and slams him for a two count.
That, let's be fair, that was impressive.
Yeah, that must take a shit ton of strength to catch that guy.
Yeah, fair play to Vader. He elevates himself to a level where Ahmed can catch him.
Yeah,
but again, full credit to Ahmed for catching him.
Yeah.
Owen tags in and hits a spinning heel kick to Ahmed and celebrates.
One thing I will say about Ahmed is that, you know, we talked about Goldust's arse. Ahmed's got that thing where like half of his pants are riding up again.
I think he's always had that.
You can see most of his arse as well.
Owen works over Ahmed to more Sid chants, but Ahmed gets a big press slam and tags Sid. Sid big boots Owen and whips him into his own team's corner, where Owen bounces out and tags the Bulldog. Bulldog gets a big vertical suplex on Sid.
Oh, that was awesome.
Which JR sells as unbelievable.
And it is.
Yeah, guy that size. And it was perfect. That was really...
Textbook.
Good one, yeah.
Because Sid's huge, right? Sid is a legitimate, massive guy. And Bulldog's, I'll just do a stalling suplex on him.
Vader enters and elbow drops Sid, and the Bulldog gets a two from the cover. Bulldog tags Vader, and I keep saying this, but we get more Sid chants.
Mm.
Yep.
And Sean's actually aiding the Sid chants. You can see...
He does like a weird pointing thing, doesn't he? Yeah. Vader hits an avalanche splash and tags Davey Boy. Bulldog tries to punch Sid down, but no dice, and Sid tags Sean in. Sean gets a quick cover off an axe handle from the top. Sean whips Bulldog into the corner, does some weird spinny thing, charges Davey, but Davey moves and Sean goes shoulder first into the ring post. A bit of miscommunication from Camp Cornette sees Davey Boy whipped into Vader and Owen accidentally elbow drop the Bulldog before Sean gets a two. Owen comes in and he and Sean Oklahoma roll around the ring, leading to a series of pin attempts.
Oh, that Oklahoma roll thing I thought was very interesting.
Different.
Yeah, it's not the sort of thing that you'd expect to see in this match.
You're not going to see it from anyone else, are you?
Yeah.
I want to see...
Sid and Vader.
Just try this on each other. Owen looks for a suplex, but Sean victory rolls him and again they exchange pins. Some great wrestling here from Sean and Owen with backslides and head scissors for various cover attempts before Owen ends it with a clothesline for a two.
Yeah, I got that down. Just the section with Sean and Owen was fucking amazing.
And they are the only two people in the match that are going to do that, but it's almost like this sort of weird little, and here's the wrestling section.
Mm. Yeah,
but it's cool.
There's lots of different chapters to this main event, and they're all really good.
It is quite nicely built in the sense of you have got a sense of variety within this match.
Owen tags the Bulldog, who launches Sean high with a back body drop and then a leg drop for a two. A power slam also gets a two. Sean runs the ropes where Owen clocks him with his cast and Davey Boy hits a whopper clothesline.
Mm.
Vader enters and hammers away at Sean in the corner before whipping Sean across the ring, where he takes a Flair-esque bump to the outside. As Vader looks to wear down Sean, a fan leaps up on the apron.
Yeah.
As he looks to climb into the ring, Ahmed and Davey Boy make a move for him, and fearing for his life, he rightfully retreats.
Yeah, but fair enough. I mean, it's all very funny. I'm going to get in the ring, but if you climb into the ring and you're suddenly confronted by Ahmed Johnson and a really pissed off looking bulldog, yeah, he thinks better of it and legs it.
Yeah, it's absolute genius because you see him start to climb the ropes and those two just sort of appear from either side of the camera.
Yeah.
And then you see him just instantly jump back down and leg it. What we said last episode, if you're going to try and get in the ring with guys like this, you deserve a fucking kick in.
Yeah, expect it.
The crowd pops, not sure if it's for the guy himself or for security, I presume, escorting him away.
Mm. I'd have liked to have seen more of that. You know, when you get something interesting like that, I'm drawn to it.
It's like the times the crowd are paying attention to something else and you can't work out what it is.
In a kind of perverse way, I'd like to see Ahmed get to him first and just to see what he'd do.
This pay-per-view would then not be available on the network as it would feature a murder. Vader applies a cuddle to Sean for a very long time.
This is the one low point of the match, actually. This does go on for
a while.
Drags,
doesn't it?
Vader chokes Michaels when the referee isn't looking. Sean breaks it, but walks into an avalanche attack. Vader splashes Sean, but before he can cover, he turns into a textbook clothesline from Ahmed. I don't mean a textbook clothesline as in perfect. I mean a textbook Ahmed Johnson clothesline. It's random and it's out of nowhere. He just wanders into the ring, clotheslines him, and then wanders back out.
But it's like a massive whack, isn't it?
Yes.
He just runs in and twats him one and then walks off.
Vader makes the tag to the Bulldog, cutting Sean off before he makes the tag. Sean bumps and feeds for the Bulldog before Davey gets Sean up in a backbreaker. Sean escapes and looks for a crucifix, but Davey Boy slams Sean to the mat, and Vince, for some reason, calls it a Samoan drop when it was just a drop out of a crucifix. Mm. Davey Boy misses a charge in the corner and he tags Owen, who also cuts Sean off from the hot tag. Owen and Sean do a double collision spot mid-ring, and Bulldog tags in and hits a power slam, but Sid breaks up the cover with a big leg drop.
Is that the bit where Sid does his breakup but it takes ages?
Yes.
So,
and he jumps super high on the leg drop.
But why does he have to run the ropes to do that?
Why not?
Because the ref would have clearly already counted to three by the time he hit it.
I'm going to reveal this to you. Sid's not the smartest wrestler in the world.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was not smooth.
Sean finally makes the hot tag to Ahmed, but, oh no, the referee doesn't see it. And while Earl Hebner deals with Ahmed, and for some reason Jose Lothario, who has gotten up on the apron, Camp Cornette gives Sean a kicking. Davey Boy holds Sean for an Owen dropkick off the top, but Sean moves and Owen dropkicks Davey Boy. Sean makes the long-awaited hot tag to Sid, who squares off with Vader. He can't clothesline the Mastodon down, but he can chokeslam Vader. And Owen.
Yeah.
And the Bulldog. Fuck yes, Sid is the best wrestler ever.
And they're all good chokeslams, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
He even gets fucking Vader up.
Yeah.
Job done. Sid tags Ahmed and they double clothesline Vader. Sid and Sean then execute the rocket launcher onto Vader, but Bulldog breaks up the pin. As Ahmed and Bulldog brawl on the outside, Sid and Owen join them. Cornette gets up on the apron and Sean looks to clock him, but Vader stalks Michaels with Cornette's tennis racket. Sean is too smart, however, and knocks the racket out of Vader's hands. He whacks Vader with it himself, and he whacks Vader.
Yeah.
And looks for the cover, but Vader kicks out at two. Sean tunes up the band, but Cornette grabs Sean's foot. Vader splashes Sean in the corner as Jose Lothario clocks Cornette. Vader hits the Vader bomb and covers for the three at 24:32. Post-match, Sid checks on Sean, and as Camp Cornette celebrates, Sid and Ahmed attack, with Sid hitting power bombs on Bulldog and Owen. He looks for one on Vader, but Bulldog manages to drag Vader away from it. Sean, wonderfully recovered, then flies over the top rope at Vader and attacks him on the outside. Sean and his pals then celebrate their loss in the ring.
Yeah.
How did this happen that Shawn Michaels takes the pin here?
Yeah, is this the cleanest way that he ever loses?
I guess it's obviously to set up Vader as his challenger at SummerSlam. Yeah. And I do like the finish in that, Cornette grabbing his foot makes sense, but, you know, Vader shouldn't need help from Jim Cornette to get the pin over Michaels.
So it's kind of a little bit on the cheating side, because Cornette grabs the leg, but pretty much Vader legitimately hits him with his big move and Sean lays down for the three count.
Yeah, but 20 seconds later, he is up and flying over the top ropes at him.
And then they're all celebrating to his music at the end.
Yeah, it's kind of cunty.
I really don't like...
Sorry, Mrs. Scrivens. Yeah.
I really don't like when the heel team win a match, but they still have to have the face team celebrating at the end.
Yes.
I kind of disagree with that ethos.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're coming from there. I mean, yeah, it's all to set up Vader as the challenger to Shawn at SummerSlam, but I don't know what Shawn giving him a kicking after the bell does to set up that match.
No. In fact, it would have more of a setup if he's just lost to Vader and Vader kind of had him, then it
and then they can sell, wow, he's just pinned the WWF champion. Can he do it at SummerSlam?
Exactly. Yeah.
The match itself, though, what a match.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic stuff.
What you have here is four particularly talented people, the heel trio and Shawn, and two guys who, despite a lesser amount of talent, are over.
Mm. Yeah.
Seriously over.
Sid being over is really weird in that Sid was not awesome in 1995. It's not like he was great, went away, and people have been dying to see him come back. Sid was bad, went away, came back, for no reason is over, and is now awesome.
Mm. Yeah, how has that happened?
Admittedly, all the heels bumped like bosses for him, but Sid himself clearly gave way more of a shit than he did the previous year.
He was really good.
His selling still is slightly odd when he's getting hit, but his, the pace, the energy, the variation, everything was so much better about Sid than what we saw before. Everything.
I almost wonder if it's like one of those weird chicken or egg situations. Mm. Like, what came first? Sid was over and Sid was good.
Mm. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Sid is good because he's over, and Sid is over because all of a sudden he's good.
I think an interesting thing for me, because if I just ignore lots of other factors here, I'll just say Sid is really entertaining at the minute.
Yeah.
I will say this is the beginning of probably the best year of Sid's career.
Mm. Is it?
Certainly, you know, he's most over and he's, you know, you're never going to get a 5-star match out of Sid, but the higher quality of the matches he will have will be contained in this year run he has.
Fair enough, Sid. Well done.
Well, if it's anything like this, I'll look forward to it.
And, you know, and he's plugging a gap left by the damn Ultimate Warrior, and he's doing a good job of it. And there's not that many people they could have bought in that would be able to fill that gap in a reasonable way.
Yeah, you almost think kind of on the books, the only logical replacement would be Yokozuna, who would have beef with Camp Cornette. So
yeah,
you could have plugged him in there, but, you know, would he have contributed to this match in the same way Sid did?
No. And you've got the shock factor of Sid coming back as well.
And you've got that little storyline, which admittedly they don't sort of play later on in the match, but, you know, I'm sure audiences would have had it on their minds, like, will Sid turn on Shawn again?
Yeah.
The little Owen Shawn segment I thought was absolutely top stuff and made me wish there was a match between those two for the title on pay-per-view at some point. There isn't, not to spoil it, but yeah, they should have been.
That is such a shame, though.
This match is also effective from the perspective of transferring Shawn's feud from the Bulldog over to Vader.
Yeah.
So, obviously, logically, we've had the two Bulldog-Shawn matches and their feud has sort of continued into the six-man, but coming out of the six-man, you know, Vader's the next feud.
It's clever booking.
Everyone felt like a main eventer for just being in this match. And, okay, you've got all your eggs in one basket, but you've got a very good basket.
And everyone steps up to the plate, don't they? There's no one that pulls in a duff performance here. They're all great.
Yeah. This match, I'd say, I think is definitely somewhat of a forgotten classic. Is it something you've ever heard of, Paul?
Never heard of it.
Mostly considering another six-man tag match this month got a lot more attention, I would say, despite this being 10 times the match that was.
Oh, yeah.
The vow from Cornette kind of gave away the result, but it didn't take away from the sheer fun of the match.
Hmm.
Highest recommendation?
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, dead good.
I mean, realistically, I think if, like I was talking about earlier, if I was to watch this show, the pay-per-view again, I'd skip most of it and probably go straight to this main event, give it a good watch.
Yeah, same here. The rest of the show was fairly unremarkable. I've used that word far too much this episode, but the main event is kind of a must-watch, really. If you're going back through this era of wrestling and you're swinging by this pay-per-view, if you're going to do anything, just watch that match.
I think, if nothing else, for the staggering reaction that Sid gets.
Like I say, we've covered it, but it's sort of inexplicable, but really awesome.
How about Camp Cornette, guys, huh? How about Camp Cornette? They say it couldn't be done, but we did what couldn't be done, and we beat him. You beat the champion. I lost a racket over it, but I don't care, because Vader beat Shawn. Camp Cornette, now you're going for the title. You're going for the glory. You're going for it all. Slammy Award winners, champions. We are the man. Put her there, baby, huh?
A Coliseum home video exclusive sees Camp Cornette celebrate despite losing a tennis racket, and a video package then ends the show. So overall thoughts on the event?
Saved by the main event.
Yeah, I'll echo what Paul said. It pretty much says everything you need to say about this show.
I think the Mero Austin match is definitely worth a watch. It's not a classic, but like I think you said, Paul, certainly above average.
Yeah.
The rest of the card, yeah, you can do without. Mankind worked hard to get that match over, but it's got no reason to happen, and therefore no sort of reason to go back to it. The opener was a bit of a dud. The Goldust Taker match is a bit of a dud, but absolutely the main event is a must-see, especially for this sort of time period.
Mm-hmm.
So, match of the night and MVP.
Main event and Sid.
Main event and Sid.
Main event, although Austin Mero, like I say, I think definitely deserves a mention, or certainly needs to be in the conversation. And MVP, Sid, for somehow being everything he wasn't in 1995.
Yeah, if you just look at it, we've talked about the work rate in the match. So his in-ring ability seems to have gone up tenfold. Plus, his promos were not fluffed and were really good and atmospheric. And he drives his car.
Plus, his driving's 10 on 10.
Yeah.
The kid who puts the Burger King crown on Lawler deserves a mention as well. That is the ultimate payoff to all the Burger King chants, I think. Mullet of the night.
Slim pickings, I would say. The mullets are really receding.
Literally.
Yeah. He's probably got to swing round to Mark Mero. I think he's still rocking a mullet.
What about Sid?
Sid didn't seem as mullety as it did before. Maybe that was the source of his
bad performances.
Yeah, his crap performances was hampered by a mullet.
He's spending too much time on his hair previously, obviously.
Yeah. Last final question then. Did you ever think we'd have a pay-per-view where all three of us deemed Sid as the MVP?
And for legitimate reasons.
Yeah,
not out of any kind of irony. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Weird stuff.
Excellent. And on that bombshell, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/New Generation Project Podcast. We are also on Twitter.
At the surprisingly over.
New Gen Podcast. That was a good one. Well done. Yeah. You can, as ever, rate, review and subscribe for all of our episodes as soon as they are available on iTunes. If iTunes isn't your thing, you can also check out new episodes on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/newgenpodcast, on Stitcher Radio or on piledriverwrestling.net. Or if you've just found us and want to catch up, our back catalogue is going up one by one by one on botchamania.com and also on insidetheropes.com. And you'll be able to check out some of their audio over on our SoundCloud page, including their review of WWE Payback 2015, which I thought was all right.
I've not seen it. What was the standout of it?
The tag title match, 2 out of 3 falls, was pretty good. The main event was pretty good as well. Had a nice little Shield reunion type thing and a good bro moment between Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns.
Okay.
Calling Spots issue 15 is available for pre-order now over at callingspots.com. The issue features a cover story on New Japan Pro Wrestling, accompanied by some awesome cover artwork. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Also inside will be a piece that I've written on PWG and why I feel that's a promotion that everybody should be checking out. And I've also been shown the artwork for that, and that is lovely too. There's a ton of other stuff in there, and it's all for $1.99, or subscriptions are available.
That is ridiculously reasonable. I'm not saying that just to be friendly to you or friendly to them. It is ridiculously good price.
What else is a good price?
I think I'd quite like a T-shirt.
Somehow. Would you like a T-shirt with your name on it?
Yeah. Yes, I would.
If you want a Scrivens 3.14 t-shirt, you can go to newgenpodcast.bigcartel.com. Pick one up. They are $12.99 plus shipping to wherever you are in the world. Different rates apply. But yeah, buy one, please, and ensure that I'm not stuck with, you know, loads of t-shirts with Paul's name on to last me the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Episode 39 will see us return to the world of weekly episodic television to take a look at Raw and Nitro in late July 1996, comparing and contrasting where those shows are at. It's been a while since we've done one of them. Let's see how the weekly shows are looking.
I think I'd be really interested to see what Nitro's looking at post-Hogan turn.
Yep.
Actually, and see where that's all going, because if you read anything, you hear things in all those history WWE shows, all the early NWA stuff is supposed to be like white-hot good. So,
yeah, well, you'll have your chance to form an opinion.
I'm looking forward to it.
My name is Stuart Brooks. I shall say goodbye.
I'm Adam White. Goodbye.
I'm at Yes Paul Scrivens. Bye. Bye. Yeah.
perfect.